Okay, good afternoon. So usual, just to begin with some Sifri Ezer that are relevant for extra limud or for Chazara. Besides the classic works, the Shulchan Aruch and the Aruch HaShulchan, etc. So also the Chacham HaSadam is on Hilchos Mila in the later section, so that's about 30 sifim or so. It's a good way to just review B'kitzur Nimritz, the Kari Halacha. There are also a few contemporary Sfarim if you haven't already used. Some excerpts of which appear in the packet. There was a Moyle by the name of Piratinsky, who I think just recently retired from practice. Put out a Sefer called Sefer Bris, which is basically a Shita Mekubetzes on everything under the sun concerning Mila. And unlike some other Mechabrim, he's not averse to getting involved in massive tangents, even though they're related to Mila by just one point of contact. So it's a very good reference work for many of the topics, too, that have anything to do with Mila. One of the topics that he discusses at length, parenthetically, is the issue that Ratanda touched upon with that surprising Chassam Sofer about Kedushas Yisrael and exactly at what point, if at all, does a Jew who has been given up his religion, or to what extent is his Dino Kaakum, and so on and so forth, Lagabi Kiddushin and other things. So he has a long arichas there of Piratinsky and the Sefer Bris, starting all the way from the Gemaras and the Gaonim, all the way down to the contemporary poskim. So just as a sample of what material he has there. But of course also the regular material on Bris, an enormous amount of material. Both, and he has two sections to the Sefer. One is the more Bekitzer, although even the Kitzer is an Arichas, and then he has the Arichas, the essays. It's really a very good reference tool. I'm not sure how available it is. It used to be on the shelf, but that hasn't been here for years. I don't know. So I guess some well-meaning fourth-year student must have maybe used it and forgot to return it. I don't know who else is using it, but I happened to pick up a copy for $6 at the farm sale about 4 years ago, so it was a real metziah, but since then I haven't seen it. I didn't really look online. But if you can get a hold of that Sefer, it's really a very good research tool. More than once I've lent it out to prospective fathers, etc., you know, just for to brush up on certain halachas concerning Mila. There's also I think it's a 4-volume work that was available at the farm sale, everything in the past now, it's already over, called the Otzar Bris, which has a chelek more along the style of the Shmir Shavos Kolchasa, you know, just Hilchos Mila with footnotes, and then he has some essays as well. Of course, since Mila touches a lot upon medical issues, so many of the medical halachic works also have a lot on Mila. The Nishmas Avram, for example, and other Sfarim, I think recently a lot of that was translated to English also. So these are some of what I'm familiar with from what I've seen. In terms of reference work for the rabbi's shelf concerning Mila, which is certainly that comes up a lot. Okay, in terms of what we're trying to cover in the Chabura, so our starting point is going to be the Shulchan Aruch. We'll try to cover as much as we can in the time allowed. If there's a little bit left over for Mila, we'll push it off to next week when we'll do Geirus. There's less in the Shulchan Aruch on Geirus, although there's more outside of the Shulchan Aruch on Geirus. I'd like to cover a little bit of that also. We'll try, as time permits, and especially toward the end, if there are certain topics that just boys will like review on from the Chaburis, as I can, I'll try to do so as well. I'll try to stick those in, po v'sham, throughout our discussion of the Shulchan Aruch from the Chaburis and Rav Tendler Shlita. Okay, we begin from the very beginning, that Simon Reish Samach, the Shulchan Aruch, writes that Mila is a very important mitzvah. It's the single most important mitzvah, saseh. And the Shach quotes from the Beis Yosef and the earlier sources, the Gemaras, etc., because it's a Seishi Yeshbo Karis. Of course, that has to be qualified, as we'll see later. It's Yeshbo Karis only on the child himself when he gets older. There's no Karis on the mitzvah of the father, as we'll see later, on the Beis Din Dumila. That's a regular mitzvah to say, but it's Yeshbo Tzad Karis on the child. In the Beis Yosef, they quote from the Gemara Nedarim that it's also considered a crucial mitzvah over the fact that because Nichnasu Olav Yud Gimel Brisos, I think that's Gemara Nedarim, And Hashkafically, of course, and the Aruch HaShulchan speaks about this a lot concerning the fact that there's so many brachos concerning Milah, as opposed to other mitzvahs which only have one birchas mitzvah. Here there are three brachos, not all of them necessarily birchas mitzvah, as we'll see later, but there are three brachos, because Milah is not only a mitzvah, it's also a knisa labris. It's a treaty with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the bris shel Avraham Avinu. So in this sense, it's a very important mitzvah, which is why the poskim are very adamant about, of course, not only doing it and properly, but also doing it bizman at the earliest opportunity. And Siman Reish Samach Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch discusses the threefold obligation of Mila concerning who exactly is the obligated one. So as is well known, the famous Braisa, Masech Kedushin, speaks about the Chiyuvei Ha'av Al Abein. One of them is Mila, which we learned from Avram Avinu, V'yom L'Avram Yitzchak Beno. And if the father didn't do the job on the eighth day, so then the Beis Din has to do it. I'll just give us a Ma'ar Mokum, the Aruch HaShulchan, as to exactly when the Beis Din steps in. And the basic rule is that if they see the Av is Misrashal totally, and it's well known that he's not going to do it at all, so then they step in right away. But if it's, you can't be certain, maybe the father will do it, maybe he's just a little stubborn, so then obviously the Beis Din can't step in till at least day 9, because it's the father's prerogative, and as the Ramah writes, you can't steal away the mitzvah from him. You can't do it shalom yidaitoi, if there's a chance that he'll do it. So basically the Beis Din's obligation under ordinary circumstances is going to step in the 9th day if the father didn't do it. But there could be circumstances, if you know in advance, the father, whatever, is not religious or something, but you know for sure there's no chance you're going to convince him, so then you could even step in on day 8 and take the mitzvah from him. So if the father doesn't do it, so then the Beis Din does it. And if the Beis Din doesn't do it, so then when the katan gets older himself, when he hits bar mitzvah, so then he himself becomes chayiv. And the way the Ramah paskins, which is actually machlokes in the Rambam and the Ravid, that b'chol yom oivrim ba'ein shemelu, meaning we assume that not only every day that the kid doesn't do the mitzvah is he violating a mitzvah tasei, but he also is chayiv karis, meaning he has the oinish of karis on him. Obviously, it's up to the Ribbono Shalom when he chooses to enact that oinish karis, whether b'ol mazeh, b'ol mabo, etc. Obviously, many rishonim are also Hashem is marachaf with them. But that happens to be the position of the Ravid. The Rambam very famously writes that he's chayiv karis biyom moso. So it's already too late. So obviously that means karis olam haba, the way the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, which he identifies as the only form of karis. But the regular, the standard makor seems to indicate that there are two types of karis. There's karis premature death or loss of children, or the karis olam haba. Obviously, the Rambam is writing that he's chayiv karis upon death, so that obviously is referring to the karis in Olam Haba. The Ramah has an interesting psak here, even though it's more of a shkafic idea, but says v'chol yom ovrim be'on shim elu. That sounds like he's chayiv karis every single day, as noted by the Gra that he's taking sides in the machlokes and the Ravid and the Rambam. The Aruch HaShulchan tries to make shalom between the Rambam and the Ravid, that everyone's agreeing with each other, but the standard poskim on the page don't seem to go that route. Okay, so it devolves upon the father, the Beis Din, and the child. What does that mean, that it's the Beis Din is chayiv? So the Aruch HaShulchan has a discussion on this. I had a chance this year. I tried to be mosif a little bit, in terms of my own learning. So previous years I did a lot of Chacham Sadam. This year I did the Aruch HaShulchan. So you'll hear a lot of Aruch HaShulchan because it's fresh in my mind. And the other poskim, as quoted by the Sefer Bris, that also go this way as well, the Divrei Malkiel and others, that we know that Beis Din has two roles, the role of Mishpat, and they also have a role of representing the Tzibur. That was my first year, I was in Rav Shechter's year, so I think that was one of the opening shiurim about the two roles of Beis Din, a representative of Klal Yisrael, and you could extend that, and it was a local Beis Din, that they have to take care of the needs of the city, and at Beis Din of Mishpat. So here when we say Beis Din, obviously there's no formal yeshiva's Beis Din, they're not judging necessarily, but as the Aruch HaShulchan writes, they're the ones who are responsible, if there is a standing Beis Din in the town, to take care of the religious needs of the town. So if the father's not doing the mitzvah, so then they have to do it. And what if there is no Beis Din in town? So then it devolves upon what the Beis Din is representing, the Tzibur. So the town has to get together and take care of it. Now obviously, as you know, the Gemara is an expression, the same expression appears in English in a different way. Kedere de Beishutfi, lo chamim v'lo kariri, if you have a whole... So too many cooks spoiled the broth, however you're going to put it, that you got to get it done, so obviously it's going to have to be one person, you do it. Okay, but it'll be a choyvas hatzibur. There's a discussion within the Sefer HaBris, Is there also a chayvas hayachid that may be included within that chayvas beisdin? Is that every individual Jew, not just on the Sibur level, but if they know that there's a kid who doesn't have a bris, well, they have to take care of it. So that's debatable. That already you could say that maybe there is no such chiyuv, other than obviously Yisrael, Gemilas Chasadim, and Ruchnius, but it might not necessarily be included in that obligation of beisdin, which would be more of a tzibur type idea. So again, the simplest way to understand that, I think, is as Yeruch Hashulchan puts it, that if there is a beisdin, so Sedeta wants to take care of it, who else is going to take care of the Yoni Tzibur? And if there is no beisdin, so it devolves upon the Tzibur. You don't say there's no beisdin, it's Potter, so that community has to take care of it. Within this regard, that idea, that concept of the fact that beisdin is not an absolute, and also a suggestion that if there is no beisdin, it might even be chayvas hayachid on every individual, although even if you don't go that route. But that helps understand the several pischei tshuva throughout the limud here. For example, what if there is no father? So, before we get to the pischei tshuva, what if there is no father? So later on, of course, the father's bracha, besides the bracha Moel makes, alamila, is lachnisai b'rvisa shalom avina. What if there is no father? So we'll see later on machlokis. Some hold you don't say, some say you do. So we paskin that you do. So who says the bracha? The Beis Din. Three dayanim get together and say the bracha. So the psak of the Ramah is that the minig is that the sandik makes the bracha. Why should the sandik make the bracha? Why didn't the Beis Din make the bracha? They're the ones who have mitzuvah to be machnis in l'vritz from Avinu. So apparently, well, you got to pick a person here. You know, so he is part of the tzibur. So he, you know, even if there was no formal, even if it was smooth, you didn't need the Beis Din to get together because you have a grandfather, an uncle, or someone who's taking care of the kid. So that's the idea that Klal Yisrael HaMetzuvah and one representative is saying Lachnitza B'Risa Shalom Avinu. If you understand it's even on the Yachid, so it even makes even more sense for a Yachid to say it. But even if it's on the Tzibur, obviously someone's going to have to represent the Tzibur. Now, that's in terms of the Psak of the Ramah that you make such a bracha. As we'll see later, that is debated. The Rambam disagrees with that. The Ravid holds that way. The Rambam holds that there is no bracha in that case. In the Pischei Tshuva, two of them, I'm just going to cross-reference over here from two simonim. So the Pischei Tshuva in Reish Samach Dalid, Si'if Katan Yud Beis, quotes in the name of the Chacham Tzvi, that if you don't have a father, so then, or if the father's not around, whatever, so then the brother of the child comes before the apotropis, in terms of having a schus to do the milah. And then he writes, "Manirali Poshet Tehuadin Karov Acher." So, what's going on over here? What gives them the right to do it any more than anybody else? So it appeared to me, even though I'm saying a little bit off the cuff, because I didn't do my homework. I didn't check up the Chacham Tzvi. It could be I did one year, but it could be I forgot what he says. But it sounds like it's going in the same direction here. There's no father, so the Beis Din has to take care of it. No, but the bottom line is, so that's going to devolve on one person. So who's the person? So here the Chacham Tzvi gives you a rule that obviously the closest you are to the child, so the more achrayis you're going to have to take. So therefore he writes, halacha lemaisa, just in terms of who has the schus to actually do the cut. So he gives preference to the brother or any other or relative, if there is no brother, over the apotropis. Again, the dynamic seems to be devolving and actualizing that obligation on the Beis Din to the Yachid. In a similar way, Rabbi Kiva Eger, speaking in a different context about who makes the bracha of Lachnisa b'Vrisa Shalom Avinu, the Chacham Tzvi was talking about who does the Mila. Now we're talking about who makes the bracha of Lachniso. So Rabbi Kiva Eger, quoted by the Pischei Tshuva in Simen Reish Samach Hei, Sivkot and Gimel, writes that if you have a Yosom who has no father, so who should say the bracha of Lachniso? So he says the grandfather. Because he's more Roy than the Sandik. Let's say they're being Mechabed, someone else other than the grandfather. Again, what's the dynamic over here? Who has more right to say that bracha than anybody else? So again, you can go in two different flavors of it, but either that's the most identifiable yachid that the obligation of the Beis Din is going on, or if you go with that other approach, that it's even on a yachid to do it, not just on a Beis Din. So obviously, Karov Kodem, the one who is closer to the child she's doing. So I think you put those various halachos together, with the common denominator being that there is another level of obligation, layer, I should say, if the father's not around, on the Beis Din, which obviously is going to have to devolve into one individual, it's going to have to take charge, to do the milah, to say the bracha, so on and so forth. Okay. The Ramah continues to say that the woman is not chayiv to do milah to her child. What does that mean? That means she's not chayiv on level 1, or she's not chayiv on level 2. So that's a machlokus. I think the standard pshat is that, and that's actually a discussion in the Rishonim in that sugya, in Kiddushin, Daf Chav Tes, and trying to answer some kashas that come up in that Gemara. So the Rishonim take different stances on that. I think the more popular approach is that the woman is excluded not only from level 1, which is the obligation of parent to be mal the child, so it's only av and not aim, but she's even exempt from level 2. Which is the obligation of Beis Din. Again, Beis Din is obviously going to have to devolve to one individual to say, okay, go take care of it. So some Rishonim learned that the miut of Oso velo Oso, kasher tziva Oso elokim, referring to Avraham Avinu, velo Oso, meaning not Sarah, and not all subsequent Jewish mothers, that excludes the woman from the chiyuv of Midin Beis Din as well. And others disagree with that. I think they quote from the, or the Ruach, if I'm not mistaken, falls the other way. Is that correct? The Machna quotes the Ozerua.
I don't know. He argues, and
he says that the woman is chayiv. Right. So I think the Sefer Bris quotes in the name of one of the Rishonim, I think the Ozerua, that the woman is chayiv midin Beis Din. Okay. Interesting. This is more for that sugya. I just mentioned it quickly, because the Ramah does say ani shechayeves. What does that mean? Maybe not quite. Maybe she is chayiv on that second level when there is no father, in terms of karv kodim, that she's the closest relative. So maybe she should be taken care of it as that. That idea that the woman is not chayiv lomlas bina, at least when there is a father, and if not, tali in that machlokes we've shown him, has relevance later as well. I'm just trying to present it in a way to put several halachas together for purpose of memory. So in Reish Samach Dalet, at the very end of Sif Aleph, so the Shulchan Aruch discusses various choshe mishpat rules about if the father appointed a moil and he wants to back out, when can he, when can't he. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that the woman's hiring of a moil when there is a father is non-binding. And the father could just totally override her in that. And because she's not chayev, Islam was bina, at least when there's a father around. That machlokas is shown him about whether a woman maybe does have a chayev midin bezdin, so then that would be relevant for a shayla, what happens if there's no father, and the mother appointed a moil, is that a binding agreement? So that would probably be dependent on that machlokas, about whether there is some kind of level 2 obligation. By level 2, I mean midin beis din, for the woman to give a milah to her child. Okay, as I mentioned, the Ramah mentions that you're not allowed to do the milah without the father's permission. If the father's away, so he should at least be authorizing the milah, preferably appointing the moil as a shliach, although we'll discuss that a little more by Riches later. And if the moil refuses to do it and the father can't afford it, so then the Beis Din has to step in and force the moil to do it. As Paskin by the Ramah. And the Pesach Yeshiva quotes, they could even promise the moil they'll pay him and then don't pay him. Because he has to do it, that's it. They could use that trickery to get him to do it. So parenthetically, just within that, just to finish up that prat, the language of the Ramah from the Rashba is it's not darkened Shalzer Yisrael to insist on a salary for the milah, they should do it for free, and so on and so forth. So V'chana Bein Shoyal, that I think the going rate for milah is $500 and up, and how exactly does that stem with this Ramah? So the truth is that there are some oilim who are financially independent. I think one who lives on the other side of the heights, who officially doesn't take a salary for the milah. I think he asks the person to make out a check to stock or something like that. But then many moilim kayadua, whose main source of income is the milah. So is that against the Shulchan Aruch? So here again, the Sefer Bris comes to the rescue. The Aruch HaShulchan already discussed this idea briefly, that's based on Schar Batala, just like a Rebbe gets paid and the Dayanim get paid. That if you want moilim to, because not everyone could have this a dual job, not everyone's an author who gets a salary for whatever money from the books as well, and there's not all moilim have the two jobs, it's something that's their main income. So in order to have moilim available, so Klal Yisrael have to be willing to pay the price. So since we don't have the temple treasury to pay them from, so the individual serves as the representative in order to make sure that that the Moilim are able to function. So that's the heter of Moilim taking a salary. It's formally structured as a kind of a schar batala for them not to engage in another job. Okay, which is room for thought for Bayim too, that if the Moilim are financially independent, then maybe they can't take a salary for the Moilim, for the Mila. Maybe they have to insist to give the money to Stalker, etc., whatever. Probably can't even force their father to give money to Stalker. Okay. I wanted to go back for a moment, even though the primary discussion of this is a massive discussion in that sugya and Kiddushin Daf Chav Tes, and also it's relevant as a nafkamina and a chakira of shlichus in general, but since it's relevant to halacha lemaisa, what exactly is the father supposed to do if he can't do the mila? And is he giving up his mitzvah, or is he being yotzi with shlichus? I just want to discuss briefly exactly how the level 1 chi of a father fits and interrelates with the level 2 chi of a basin. And specifically in the following situation. Most fathers don't do the mila themselves. So should we view that as a situation whereby, okay, I can't do it, Onas Rachmana Patre, and the language that I heard from Rav Braunspiegel Shlita when he was the previous machzor of the this particular slot in 4th year Loch Lamaisa. So he quoted that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was machmir for a certain shach, etc., that we'll get to, that he did the mila on his own kids, and apparently the job wasn't such a good job. Whatever, the kid was gemalot, etc., but there was whatever, some medical issues, whatever, maybe didn't bandage well, I don't know exactly what happened. So, who was the dayan? Rav Simcha Zissel? Who was the dayan in Brisk? Rav Simcha Zelig, right? So he paskin that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, with all due respect, you are not allowed to do the bris on the next child. And I still remember the Yiddish expression that Rav Braunspiegel used is that, yeah, shach hein shaint morgen, yeah, I know the shach, but there's no chiyuv to make your son into a kalyika. So apparently, roughly translated into English, even though I'm not exactly sure what a kalyika is, but basically means that you can't basically risk your son's life as a result of keeping that chumrah. So the bottom line is that most fathers don't do a mila, and the question is, so what are they doing? So when we go to the sources, we see that this is a massive machlokis, perhaps in the Rishonim, and certainly in the Achronim. No, I shouldn't say perhaps. It's for sure in the Rishonim and it's for sure in the Achronim, because the people say it clearly, actually. That one approach is that the father must do the mila. In other words, just like a person must put on tefillin, and he can't make a shliach to put on tefillin, and same thing with tzitzis, and so on and so forth, and even kiddush, right? You're not really making a shliach, you're being yotzi v'shimei ka'ona. So too, the father must cut. What if you can't do it because you're afraid you're going to make your son into a kalika? So you're an honest. So now we move to level 2 chiyuv. The level 2 chiyuv is that the basin takes over. If you go with that approach, it's obvious and apparent that if the father can do the mila, that he may not give up his mitzvah and give it over to someone else. He's not going to be yotze. Who holds like that? So the proponents of that shita, the one who's most explicit is Yor Zeruah, who writes that you cannot give it over b'shlichus, and it's quoted by the Darki Moshe, I believe in Reish Samach Gimel or Reish Samach Dalet. I didn't get a chance to recheck it this year. And the Shach, in a very famous piece in Choshe Mishpat, Simon Shin Pei Beis, which he briefly refers to here in the Shach Reish Samach Aleph, also holds that way as well in his analysis of a rush, that it's a mitzvah shebegufo, and therefore, even though he doesn't use that phraseology, I don't think, but that you, if you know how to do it, you cannot give it up, because then you're basically giving up your mitzvah, and you're giving it over to the basin. Again, there are others who hold that way as well. Many others argue on that whole position, and just to list amongst those who hold that way, starting from earlier sources, I don't know if there are any Rishonim who say so explicitly. There's certainly Mashmo Yosin Rishonim that way. The Darki Moshe, he doesn't understand that Or Zeruah. He says, why shouldn't there be Shlichus? So the Darki Moshe holds that Shlichus is certainly acceptable for Mila. That is also the Mashmos of the Mechaber in Simon Reish Samachay, Seif Tes, where he writes, Avi Abain, Omer al Moel, Lehodio, Shehu Shlucho. Right, to inform him that he is his shliach. Sounds like that there is such a thing as shlichus and mila. Within the discussion of what bracha you make on the mila, whether it's lamul or alhamila, so that also might very well touch on this topic. You'll forgive me, I didn't review it this year, but I believe the gra there is very much mashma that this is where. One second. Yeah, excuse me. Let me backtrack. What I just said is correct, that the issue of whether you say Lamul or Alhamila is going to be relevant to this topic. But the Gra I'm quoting now is in Simen Reish Samachay Sif Katan Lamed Hay, where he says Beferish, based on a certain psak concerning Shechianu, the Shlucho Kimoso. So he also uses that language, that there's such a thing as Shlichas on Mila. There is a third position. The third position is most famously given over by the Tosis Rid. Although I believe, if memory serves correctly, it's also the Mashmaos of the Maharil, as quoted by the Chochma Sodom in the Bina Sodom, that this is not a mitzvah that you must do yourself, nor is it a mitzvah that you must make a shliach for. It is a mitzvah on the father to arrange that the bris should get done. That's his mitzvah. Again, for those who learned the sugya there in Kiddushin Daf Chav Tes, that's the way the Tosis Rid answers one of Tosis Kashas there about the mitzvah Shes Mangrama aspect of Mila and why you need a special psor for women. So there are basically three shitas as to how you interrelate the father's chiv with the basin sheet, with the basin's chiv. The extreme position of the shach, which he bases on a rush, and the Or Zeruah, that it's a mitzvah shebegufo, and if you can do it, you must do it. Otherwise, you're giving it up. You're giving up the mitzvah. And the two other positions that, no, if someone else is doing it, you are fulfilling the mitzvah. How? Either through agency, that's what we quote from the Darkei Moshe and the Shulchan Aruch and the Gra, perhaps the Mashmaos of the Rambam, which the Gra is building his words on. And also, The other way to formulate it is that the nature of the father's mitzvah is to get it done. So this, of course, has a relevance halacha l'maisa. If the father can do the mila, so according to the shach shita, you have to do it. According to the other positions, you don't have to. Although, within those last two, if you go the approach of shlichus, so then you should say mitzvah bo, yosim b'shlucho. Right? If you go with the third approach, that the whole nature of the mitzvah is to get it done, so then you don't necessarily have to say mitzvah bo yosim b'shlucho. So even if theoretically you could do it and you want to give it to someone else, it would be much more you're much more able to do so. What's the psak halach l'maisa on this? I haven't seen someone get up and from what I've seen and say this is the psak, but I got the impression from the implication of the Orcha Shulchan and the Sefer Bris that the standard psak is like one of those last two shitas. That the father, we assume the father is certainly being yotzei to mitzvah by hiring a moel, and whether or not he's actually appointing him as an agent, or whether it's just that the mitzvah is to get it done, I'm not sure exactly what the hachra on this is. Although, based on shita number two, it is very common, especially amongst the moelim, who are also talmidei chachamim, to inform the father to say, I hereby appoint you as an agent. So that's in deference to position number two. According to three, you wouldn't need that. In deference to position number two, so you have this minui shlichus. Again, that's not a surprising psak, because that's a simple implication of the mechaber, the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. It's lo dio shu shlucho. Sounds like it's working through agency. Okay, for those who want to go a little further into this topic, I'm not going to go into it now. This has relevance to the whole topic of Yud Zehuvim, about whether if someone else steals the mitzvah, whether he does or does not have to pay you 10 zehuvim for stealing it from you, and you can figure it out, and depending on how you view what exactly your mitzvah is, he may or may not have to pay you. If, let's say, you hired a moel and some other moel does the trick, so is moel number two going to have to pay you because he stole your mitzvah? If you go with position number one, that you gave it away anyway, so he's not stealing any mitzvah. If you go with two, he is stealing a mitzvah, simply speaking, because you made a shliach. Okay, that's a whole discussion. I refer you to the very significant words of the Ksoisa Choshen in Choshen Mishpat Simen Shin Pei Beis, where he has a whole discussion about that very topic, but that's really not our topic for now, so we'll gloss over that.
Isn't that just
between what and what?
It's also understanding,
yeah,
that it's option one.
Right.
Then the Tosafot himself understands it as option three.
But the Tosafot is read by Tefillin.
Yeah.
But the Tosafot is read L'chor is not learning that Mila is a mitzvah shebegufo. Yeah, the Tosafot is just building on that Tosafot's read and then applying it to the Svara why Mila should be different. I don't think so. Again, could be I'm wrong. I just mentioned just very, very briefly that later we'll see it, that a katan is kosher for Mila. So the Tosafot raises this flag here. What do you mean katan kosher for Mila? But he's not a bar shlichus. Okay, so Ayin Shem. I'm not going to go further with that angle, but again, the simple reading is that you see from here that either the mitzvah is to get it done, or even if you're going to call it shlichus, it's not formal shlichus, you know, with like a shliach for kiddushin and so on and so forth. Okay, much has been said about this. Harvey Namar al Zeh, but I just wanted that which is relevant to halacha. So out of this discussion comes the common practice to appoint a moral as a shliach. And some even go further, based on Machane Ephraim, to give the Moel a dollar or so before he does the Mila, and that's based on Machane Ephraim, who suggests that Yad Poel ki Yad Balabayis is a higher level, and maybe would allow Shlichus even in areas where normally he can't. Okay, whatever, that's... The Yad Poel ki Yad Balabayis? Yeah, he did mention it. Now that you mention it, I remember, but I didn't recall that. Okay, thank you. Good, let's move on to the... So if you look in the Pesachei Tshuvos, in Sivkot and Beis, and a little bit to Shach, so they allude to that whole discussion about the Yud Zehuvim, which I briefly discussed now. Simen Reish Samach Beis. The Zman of the Mila. So here, based on the Mishnah, the famous Mishnah Megillah, that there are mitzvahs that take place during the day, mitzvahs at night. So Mila is one of them that take place during the day, and that, even though there is a machlokas about this, but we hold that that's true not only for Mila Bezmana, but even Mila Shlo Bezmana, that both of them have to take place during the day. And however, we have to define what the definition of day is. So the Mishnah Megillah teaches us that L'charchila day is from sunrise, because we don't want any errors, that's clear day. But B'di'eved, Amud HaShachar is the beginning of day. So there is a discussion in the poskim under what circumstances of Shas Hadchak, which is normally the rule, that b'Shas Hadchak you could do mitzvot that are supposed to take place during the day, even after Amud HaShachar. The Aruch HaShulchan seems to be very, very hesitant to apply that in any circumstances, but I think others are more willing to apply it in a Shas Hadchak. But a Shas Hadchak doesn't mean that you're not going to have such a crowd or people got to go to work. So that, of course, has immense relevance for the winter months right now, especially if... Congress still gets away with it and allows daylight savings times to come into effect in a week or two. So then sunrise is going to be 7:30 for a week or so, and even after the week it's going to slowly back up 7:27, 7:10, well, based on our work schedules. So it'll be very convenient if we do the Mila at 6:30, but it's a no-no, because he doesn't qualify the Shas Hadchak. So whenever you have a Mila, obviously you have to wait till sunrise. Separate discussion about Shimon Esrei and so on and so forth, Willa Chachil. It's also supposed to take place at sunrise, but that's not relevant to this question. It's very common that you'll have the shachris, no doubt, as before, and the Mila will take place after the sunrise. Okay, what's the last time for Mila? So, obviously, lecharchila, it's going to be shkia, because that's the end of Vadayom. We'll see more later when we discuss Bein Hashmashes babies and Shabbos, etc. Well, what is shkia? What is the end of the day? So on and so forth. But for now, we'll treat it as sunrise. Okay, within the time frame of day, so here the Shulchan Aruch writes that Zrizin Makdim L'Mitzvahs. And Mila basically wrote the book on it, because that's one of the makoros of... Am I going too fast there? What's the makor of Zrizin? It's from Avraham Avinu. Vayashkin Avraham Boker. Where does it say Vayashkin Avraham Boker? It says it by the Akedah, right? By Mila it says Be'etzam Yom HaZeh, right? It's the middle of the day, right? So that none of the Misnagdim could start up with Avram. Okay. Either way, it's from Avram Avinu, the first one who had the bris, but I don't know if it's written in the context of the bris. But the reason Makdim in the Mitzvah. So the post can take this halacha very, very seriously. I believe the Chai Yodam in his klalim on mitzvos, he has a, I forget which klal, but he has a general klal on doing mitzvos, bislavus, and he quotes all the various principles throughout Shas. I think he even is of the opinion this is a deraisa. This is l'charchil deraisa. It's the reason makdim l'mitzvah. That's a discussion that's quoted by the Sefer Bris, but the reason is a din derabbanan, and the limud from Avraham Avinu is only a smachta, or it's really a din deraisa. Interesting question that comes up is what general religious idea in doing mitzvos takes precedence over what? We know there's a reason makdim l'mitzvah, but we also know there's a mitzvah b'shleimusan, a mitzvah l'mahadrin, and we also know there's a berov amhadras melech, which is also an aspect of hidur. So what gives in front of what? Can I schedule the bris for 11 a.m. if that's going to get me a crowd of 300 people, where if I do it at the crack of sunrise that I'm only going to have a minyan? So that's a discussion in the poskim. Rov poskim hold that the reason wins. And they quote a Pashta Raya. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah writes that all things being equal, we blow shofar at Musaf because of the Gzeiras Malchus that originally applied. But all things being equal, we should have blown shofar at Shachris because of his reason, Makdim and L'mitzvah, and foregone the aspect of Barovam Hadras Melech, which we would have gotten at Musaf, because then the latecomers would be there. So it seems to be a Kamat Beferish Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that his reason takes precedence over Barovam. So therefore, Rova Poskim write that you sacrifice the crowd in order to have the Mila earlier. The Aruch HaShulchan is very charif on this, and he says that, and many people delay the bris because of all sorts of shtusim. it's actually stuyot, but okay, that's more Yiddish way of saying it. All sorts of shtusim. So he's very, very vehement about this. And that's the consensus of the Poskim. If you look in the Pesachei Tshuva, they quote the Shuvos Yaakov as a very similar sentiment about the Chazonim, who sing too many Shleim Kalvach Nigunim in the davening and the Marich till after Chatzos. So it sounds like from that Shavuos Yaakov, and it's terrible, absolutely terrible, because the Bris on Shabbos you can do after the davening, obviously it's a longer davening, and you don't do the Mila before Shachris. The Aruch HaShulchan gives reasons why that is. One of the reasons is because you can't eat. You can't eat before Shachris. I think the other reason is Tadir Shana Tadir, so you do Shachris first. But in any case, we certainly daven Shachris first, but on Shabbos, obviously, you're going to have to delay a little bit. But the Shavuos Yaakov says, but not after Chatzos, so you don't have to sing so many Nigunim. Sounds like from here that Chatzos is kind of a plateau when it comes to Zrizin. The earlier, the better. But if you're ready, wait till after Chatzos, so then that's even worse. Where did that come from? So I once researched this, and I think the pshat is because Vayashkem Avram Baboker. So Vayashkem Baboker. So we try for Vayashkem. And if you don't get Vayashkem, let it at least be Baboker. So if it's ready after Chatzos, so that's like a bittle of a certain plateau of Zrizin. Obviously, after that, the earlier the better. And not always can you do it after Chatzos. I'll give you just an example. Over the Hava B'didi, Baruch Hashem, and we had the opportunity to be machnas our own son, Labris. So it took place on Rosh Hashanah, and the Mo was walking in from Borough Park. For whatever reason, I'm not sure it worked out. So they couldn't do it in Shul. It was also Shabbos Rosh Hashanah. And we weren't using the Eruv. Okay, let's leave that for the previous session of the fourth year of Lachal Maisa. So that's a whole discussion, whether you can carry the child to shul even al yidei akum. Mishnah Rav Paskins, you can't. So you have to bris at home. Well, bris at home, but people want to go to shul. So the bris was like, whatever, Rosh Hashanah. So the bris was like 2-3 o'clock. There was no option. Even if the Moyal hadn't been walking from Borough Park, that would probably be the way it would have to take place. Unless you daven hashkama, whatever, to rig it, you daven hashkama Rosh Hashanah. So sometimes you can't arrange, even in a well-meaning way, to have a debris in the morning. Obviously, the sooner the better if it's taking place in the afternoon. But there is this idea to try to, whatever you could do, to get it in before Chatzos. Tisha B'Av also, there's a din about that too. One minig, I think the Ashkenazic minig is to do the bris before Chatzos if they finish kinos before Chatzos. If they finish, you have to rush. And the Sephardic practice on Tisha B'Av, you daf go wait till after Chatzos, because that's already when the Avelus are a little bit lighter. So you have that another forum where we wait left. Because okay, so you still do it, but I'm just pointing out that you see from the Shavuos Yaakov, and it's confirmed by other poskim, that there is an idea that even if you can't do it early, you try to have before Chatzos, and I think the makor is because it's baboker. That's all I was noting. The Noi de Bihuda is quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva and Sifkot and Beis as objecting to a patent, an etza that Jews are always trying to get out of fasting. So so there was someone who had a mila shelo bezmana, so he wanted to delay his son's bris to Erev Pesach. Why don't you just make a siyum? I don't know. You get the impression that people were actually fasting then, and they didn't just make a routine siyum. So he came up with an eitzah. Let's delay the bris till Erev Pesach, and the Simchas bris will allow us to eat on Erev Pesach, so we get out of time's Bukharim. So the Navi Yehuda says, no good. So here are his reasons. Number one, Chalila, who knows, Mi Yedea Mayula Joe, maybe the kid Chalila will be Niftar. So then you won't have the opportunity to be Machnas and Larisa Shalom Avinu. Reason number two, who says that the Simcha of Asuda of Mila Shalom Bezmana is Doche, the Tainis Bechorim, anyway. And number three, Yemavatl's reason. So this Navi Yehuda serves as a forum to discuss another issue within his reason. What happens if you couldn't do the meal on day 8? For right reasons or wrong reasons. Bottom line is, now it's a meal of Shalom Bezmana. So you blew the meal of Shalom Bezmana. Now what? Now, if I'm going to do it on day 9 versus day 10 versus day 11 versus day and so on and so forth, what makes me do it at the earliest opportunity? So the mashmos of the Navi Yehuda is what makes me do it at the earliest opportunity is the fact that Zrizin Makdim in Lemitzvah. In other words, nothing more than that. So it's a lecharchila according to some deraisa. So you have to do it as early as possible. However, there are quite a few other poskim who go further than the Navi Yehuda. And they hold that if you delay a mila shalom bezmana, you are mevatel the mitzvah every day. You, the father, father's still around, or you, the beis din, if the other people in charge. Every day you don't do the mila. It's another mitzvah to say, down the drain. I use another somewhat loosely. You know, it's the same mitzvah that you mevatel again and again and again and again and again, again. So obviously that's more charif and sharper halachic machinery than just the Biddle's reason.
Why is it based on days?
Oh, so I would assume that's based on the fact that because at night you can't do the mila. Let's put it this way. Number one, it might be based on the fact that the night you can't do the mila, so that's like a gap. Number two, it might have something to do with that stipler about mitzvahs that once a day every day. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe it's totally left field. I don't know. Let's leave that for a base matter discussion. So the Navi Yehuda said it's a bittel's reason. Other poskim say that it's a bittel a mitzvah. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's the language of the Chochma Sodom. I don't recall now. Now the Dvar Avram, it's in the packet, holds more than that. He says that it's a bittel a mitzvah every second. Once you're already past day eight is only an issue of Zrizin, within day 8. Right? Anytime you do it on day 8, you're not mevatel a mitzvah, just because if you do it 3 o'clock in the afternoon as opposed to 8 o'clock in the morning. That's just Zrizin. But once you get it ready to sunrise of day 9, so then every second counts. So this has a big nafkamina. If you have a meal of shalom bezmana, again, that'll usually come up when the child's sick, lo aleinu. So, is it only a Zrizin issue, in which case, for good reasons, sometimes it could be mevatel's reason to delay the bris until late morning or even afternoon? Or is it a bittel mitzvah issue? In which case, you might even forego the minyan, which many poskim say you should not forego just because of his reason. So here you have, let's say, a child in the hospital. Doctors give the green light, and then you wait 7 days, and you're going to have the bris. Sometimes you'll have it still in the hospital or at home. But you're not going to have time necessarily to gather together even a minyan. Should you do it right away? So according to the Dvar Avram, absolutely, because you don't have a bittel mitzvah any more seconds. According to the middle approach, which I think is more the consensus approach, the middle approach, which is that it's only an issue of Zrizin as long as you're going to do it within that day. So therefore, let's say to get a minyan, I believe many would maintain that it would be kedai to get a minyan, even if you have to mevatel Zrizin within that day. Again, not necessarily like the Navi Yehuda's leniency, that it's only an issue of Zrizin on any day that you're doing it, but it's a bit la mitzvah, but only on a per day basis. Go ahead. Minyan might be more significant. Again, I in the Sefer Bris, we had a discussion about this, but minyan might be better. Before I was talking about Rovam, more than a minyan or more at the Suda, yeah.
Question. So according to the Navi Yehuda, after day 8, there's no din Zrizin anymore?
No, there is, for sure. But that's the only thing that makes me do it on the earliest day possible. In other words, not the full strength of Bittel HaMitzvah. Now, I will tell you the following, because Miktani HaTalmidim Ani, but I remember hearing a tape from Rav Shechter, Shlita, in the old tape library, which is somewhere in the inner chambers somewhere. They're waiting to put it on Torah Web. So from the IBC Shurim, so Rav Shechter quoted this Navi Yehuda differently. He said that it's a Bittel HaMitzvah every day. So the way I gave it over was the way the Sefer HaBris says over the Navi Yehuda. that according to Noda Behuda, it sounds like it's only a Bittel's reason. But I didn't get a chance to comb through the words of the Noda Behuda, but it could be that there might be another way to read it. But either way, whoever says it, there are these three positions out there. Idea of reason, idea of Bittel Mitzvah every day, the idea of every second. If you the Gilead Marashah, I remember Rav Braunschweigel used to quote this every year that he did it, speaks about the following Shiloh, which is Halacha L'maisa. The Aruch HaShulchan also takes a stance on this, the same way the Gilead Marashah does, as does Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. If you look in the package, you have from the stencil, the Gerach HaLashas. What if you have the following situation? In Shul, you have a Mila B'zmana, and you have a Mila Shalom B'zmana, to take place in the same day. Who goes first? So if you go with Devar Avram, it's a no-brainer. Mila Shalom B'zmana. Why? Because every second counts. With the other one, you're just, you know, delaying a little bit his reason. But here you're being Mivat L'mitzvah. But that's not the psak of the Gilead Marashah. The Gilead Marashah quotes from the Yad Eliyahu. I think the Reb Chaim quotes that in the name of the Birchas Avram, not the contemporary one, the different sefer. That no, Mila B'zmana, because Chaviva Mitzvah B'shaita. So first you do the Mila B'zmana, and then you do the Mila Shalai B'zmana. That's also the psak of the Aruch HaShulchan. That position is only tenable if you go with one of the first two approaches in terms of what's forcing you to do the Mila as soon as possible with respect to Mila Shalai B'zmana. What do you mean the first two? Either that's only an issue with reason or that it's only a bittel each day. So once you already have a day leeway, so then it's more kedai to do the Mila B'zmana first because of Mila Chaviv Mitzvah B'shaita. Of course, Halacha L'maisa, you'd have to have a psak on that. Again, I think the consensus would be like the Yad Eliyahu, that at least have a day window. So therefore, in such a case, Mila B'zmana, Mishlo B'zmana, you do the Mila B'zmana first. There's a moil that Rabbi Braunschweigel used to call in to give us the technical aspect of Mila that Rabbi Billet filled in under Rav Tendler. So when the boys asked him about this, so he said that the common practice as he has seen it is like the Yad Eliyahu, that Mila B'zmana first and then Mila Shalom B'zmana on the same day. Yeah? Mila B'zmana? I don't know. I haven't seen. Adarab, usually I tell them more machmir than we are here. But I don't know if it's something to do with yellow. I don't know. Maybe the Merle's waiting that, you know, maybe that's when he became un-yellow, because in Eretz Yisrael they're very machmir on yellow babies. Okay, let's continue. We don't live in an ideal world, so sometimes the Mila doesn't go right in terms of Zman. So the Ramah quotes the halachos concerning a Mila that is botched in terms of the time, both in terms of done too early in terms of days, and also that it's done at night, let's say after day 8. So the just a little background helps, as quoted basically by the Shach and a little bit to Taz also, that there is a Hagoyis Maimini that says that if you do a meal at night, again, he's talking about a situation where 8 days have passed already, so you're doing it after day 8. Again, you could clear based on a certain Shagas Aryeh that maybe the same halach should apply on the night of the 8th. All right, whatever, that's not for now. But let's make it simple. So the night of the 10th, you did Mila on the night of the 10th. What do you do now? So the Agoyis Maimini says you do a tofas dam bris. You have to make the child, it's a little drop of blood that has to come out. Which the Gemara discusses in a case where the child was born not having an orla. So here the Agoyis Maimini extends it to this kind of botched bris as well. The Rosh quotes from the Rosh Mishans, and he has a raya, which we won't go through now, that if you do a mila toches biyom, the fifth, sixth, seventh day, etc., so then you do not do a tavas dambris. So the Beis Yosef says, well, they're obviously arguing, and therefore the Rosh would paskin, if you did it after day 8 at night, you would not need a tavas dambris, and the Goyis Maimini would require a tavas dambris if you did it within 8 days biyom. And the Darkei Moshe makes shalom. He says, no, they were talking about different cases. The Goyis Maimini is talking about at night, and that's worse, if you counterintuitive, but it's worse to do a Mila at night after day 8 than to do a Mila Toches Beyom. So Toches Beyom does not require a Tavis Dambris, and Acharches Balayla does, and that's the Psak of the Ramah. The Mechaber, even though he took a stance in the Beis Yosef, the Rav Yosef Karo Paskin in the Beis Yosef like the Rosh, that you don't need a Tavis Dambris, and according to his understanding of the Rosh, not when you do a Toches, and not when you do it Balayla. Just going a little bit ahead, just to make it consistent with the Mechaber. Later we'll see the halacha of what happens if a goy does the Mila. So that's also a Pasul Abris. So what do you do? So the Mechaber says, Ein tzorech lachzor v'lomol pab shenis. That's based on a Rambam. Now, the simple reading of that is, what don't you do again? You don't do a tavas damris. Because if by Ein tzorech lachzor v'lomol pam shenis, he means you don't do another mila, so that's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. What does that mean? Well, you can't do another mila. It's gone already. It's not in the cut. Well, you can't, chalila, you can cut off some of the atara that's going to make the child into a kruas shavcha. So the simple pshat of that mechaber is that just like the Shulchan Aruch paskin with respect to Toches and with respect to Laila, he didn't paskin in the Shulchan Aruch, but he paskined it in the Beis Yosef, that there's no need for a tavas dam bris. In other words, when you do a bris, but the bottom line is there's no oral anymore, even though you messed up, there's no need to correct it. So lishitaso, he paskins like the Rambam with respect to a nachri, that there's nothing you can do. You don't have to correct it. I will grant you, and kudos to very astute members of the fourth year club who pointed this out to me. I didn't really sink in that the Shach does not read the Mechaber that way. The Shach reads the Mechaber to mean that you don't do another Mila, I mean you don't have to cut any more skin, but you do have to do a Tavas Dam Bris in the case of a Nachri. So that would cause this binyan that I'm trying to present to you to collapse, but let's not go with that Shach. Let's make believe that Shach doesn't exist. The Aruch HaShulchan goes this way, that according to the Shulchan Aruch, seems to be Beis Yosef, consistent position, Yabacha Bris, but the bottom line is the Oral is gone, so no Atavas Dam Bris. The Ramah, as we pointed out, has a Hachra. At night, you do Atavas Dam Bris. If it's a Nochri, just since we mentioned it already, we'll mention it, Reish Samach Dalet, the Ramah Paskins, you do Atavas Dam Bris, because that's a botched Bris. But if it's Toches, Bayom, so the Ramah says, that's not so terrible. Yotza. The language of the Ramah is Yotza. Again, Yotza b'dieved, obviously. This Ramah was not taken so lightly by the later poskim, and they went to the opposite extreme. Both the Taz and the Shach, both paskin lahalacha, that in both of these cases, and of course the Nochri case also, they agree with the Ramah there, you do hatavas dam bris. V'chein am adivar, that's the minig Yisrael, at least amongst Ashkenazim, I'm not sure what the Sephardi practice is, that it'll sometimes will come up in hospitals where, let's say, even a Jewish pediatrician will say, let's say it's not a Nochri Shaila. We did Toches, or afterwards Balayla, or let's say whatever, someone wasn't watching the clock and they did it Bein HaShemashis, or whatever. The bottom line is, you do Hatovas Dam Bris again. This is the Psak of the Shach and the Psak of the Taz, who see the Rosh and the Agoyis Maimini is arguing, and they were Machmir like the Agoyis Maimini, that you have to do Hatovas Dam Bris. Again, one of the fourth-year Chevra pointed out in the past, an important distinction, though, between the Taz and the Shach, that the Taz writes this as a Chumrah, but in Ikar Adin maybe you wouldn't need it, and the Shach writes it as Ikar Adin. It might have nafkaminas in terms of, you know, if it's a weak child or whatever, but you do have that nuance of difference between the Taz and the Shach. So that is the third position. Rav Yosef Karo, again, I quote him rather than the Shulchan Aruch, because he doesn't quote this in the Shulchan Aruch, that's what he writes in the Beis Yosef. Rav Yosef Karo Paskin, neither of them needs a Tavas Dam Bris. Ramah has split. Shach and Taz say both need. And now we have the Shagas Aryeh. The Shagas Aryeh, quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva, Paskins like the Beis Yosef, but with a different twist. It's more of a Lamdisha twist. You don't do a Tavas Dam Bris. But it's not because you're Yotze. The Beis Yosef might imply a little bit that you're Yotze b'dieves. No, you're not Yotze. Of course you're not Yotze. The Torah said, "Biyom Hashmini Yimo Besar Loso Bayom Hashmini," and that's it. And if you don't do it on the, if you do a Toches, you violate Shmini. If you do a Balayla, you violate Yom. So you weren't Yotze. But what are you gonna do? That's the Shagas Aryeh's Psak. You can't do anything. So what are you gonna do? Atavas Dam Bris. Lo Matzinu. Atavas Dam Bris is a substitute for Mila. The only, let me rephrase that. The only thing, the only place we find the Atavas Dam Bris in Shas is when there was no Hasara Sa'orla done by Yahadus. By Hasara Sa'orla, I'm using it in a medical way. You know, if you didn't remove the Orla after there was a shame Orla. So then the Gemara says, again, today it's on this, but that's why you're Paskin, that a Ger, see later, Reish Samaches, that a Ger who is Nisgayer in a circumcised state, you do a Tavas Dam Bris. And a Kotten Shener L'Kishumol, you do a Tavas Dam Bris. Because there was no Orla that was ever removed. But if a child was born with an orla, and the orla was removed, so you basically blew the opportunity of bris. That's it. So you don't do a tavas dam bris. In such a case, a tavas dam bris is meaningless. This is the Psak of the Shagas Aryeh. notwithstanding the roar of the lion, Arya Shog Milo Yira, except for the Mishkan of Yaakov, okay? But the Psak is like the Shach and the Taz. That's the standard Ashkenazic practice that you, from what I've heard, from the Magid Eshir and also Moalim, that we do Atavas Dan Bris, and also in the case of an Ochri. Okay. Good. Choli. Okay, so here I'm going to put together, one second, maybe we should do this a little bit differently, just because let's stick to time. Okay, let's stick to time and then we'll come back to Choli, so we can treat it all as a separate, as one unit. So in Reish Samach Beis, Sif Dalid and Sif Hei and Sif Vav and Sif Zayin, so the Mechaber has some more detailed discussions of time. So without getting involved in all of the details, the basic klolim that emerge are the following. Bein Hashmashos, which for now we'll define as between the sunset and the three stars. We'll see later when we come to Shabbos, we'll discuss more of the Chloek is Grun or Bein Atam. But so Bein Hashmashos, so you cannot risk doing the Mila on the previous day, because that might be Zayin, and certainly Lecharchila, you don't want to do a Toch Ches. So you have to push it off a day. So if a baby's born between Monday and Tuesday, Ben Hashmash, do it Tuesday. We'll see later that if the baby's born between Friday and Shabbos, so you have no choice but to push it off to Sunday, because you can't do a Suffolk Mila Shalom Bismana on Shabbos. Again, more later about how exactly we define Ben Hashmash as Halacha L'maisa, whether we're Choshish or Ben Atam Shita, we can go straight with the Grof. And how do you determine birth? It's very, in terms of this issue of when the kid's born. So the Pisrei Tshuva, both over here in Sif Katan Vav, as well as in Simen Reish Samach, we're in Simen Reish Samach Beis now. Reish Samach Beis Sif Katan Vav, as well as Simen Reish Samach Vav, Sif Katan Ches, quotes a discussion in the Poskim, which is more elaborated upon by the Sefer Bris. It doesn't look into it more. As to what's called birth, because we know that in Nidus, a woman becomes a Nida when the blood exits into the pros door from the Rechem, even though it has not been Yotzei La'avir Ha'olam. Intuitively, we would think that birth should not be defined that way. That birth should be defined as we'll see, that when Rov HaRosh or Rov HaPadachas, that's actually a discussion whether it's the whole Padachas or the Rov HaPadachas, if the baby is born the other way, so then it's breech babies, then it's Rov HaGuf, right? It's either a Rov HaRosh, which is defined as the Padachas, as some posts can say Rov HaPadachas, the forehead, or if it's born the other way, so then it's Rov HaGuf. So intuitively, we'd assume that it should follow Yitzhiyah La'avr HaOlam, which is the way the Pitzchei Tshuva quotes. However, and I remember hearing this on that same tape from Rav Shechter Shlita, that there are poskim who are choshish the other way. That birth should be defined as Yitziyah Meharechem leprozdor. Now, all things being equal, that's a matter of seconds before you go from the prozdor lavra olam. But if we're dealing with a borderline baby where mamish at the shkia, so that could be relevant, all the more so in terms of Chil Shabbos. So some poskim might be jittery about that. Others are not. I think the Pitzchei Tshuva gives you an impression that you just follow Avra Olam and that's it. Who has nemonis for that? So what emerges in the Shulchan Aruch is that you have a right to take the people involved's word for it. That you led us, the professionals that were there, so on and so forth, that they have a right to testify. However, one thing that is crucial for a Bonim to be aware of is that medical birth is not going to necessarily be the same as halachic birth. So you can't necessarily go, especially if it's a matter of a Bein HaShemoshes issue or within that region, you're going to have to do some homework as to when they put down the time, 7:20 birth, whatever, 7:15, what are they going by? After they had time, to take up the gunk, all the baby, and then they had time to write it down, now how precise are they being? So you got to do some homework on this to see what the hospital rules are and so on and so forth, to see whether you could do a bris the next day before, Shabbos, and so on and so forth. Yeah, even leaving aside this issue of the prozdor versus the rechem. But again, the general rule being that the people involved are believed. And you're allowed to make an educated guess as to when it happened. Like, for example, here you are taking care of the yoledes, and they had a child, you took care of it, and then by the time you look out, it seems like it's been dark for a while. But you can't say for sure. It seems like it has already been tzeitzik chavim for a while. but you're not certain. But that's your best assumption here. So the Mechaber says you have a right then to assume the baby was born at the night. And same the other way. If you think things dragged out enough such that this baby was born during daylight, even though you can't really prove it, but that's your assessment based on approximately how long things took, so you can go by that too. Okay, that's again what emerges from Sif Dalet Hei Vav Zayin. The strict definition, although of course now there's Zmanim charts, which of course should be used, but first we've got to figure out which Zman to use, okay? But you should know, just for the record, that a strict definition of Tzeis Kochavim is Gimel Kochavim Beinonim. Right? For Shabbos, there are other Chumras in terms of Yitzias Shabbos, but the regular halacha of Tzeis Kochavim, which is relevant for Bris, is Gimel Kochavim Beinonim, intermediate stars. There is a shach that makes it sound like that Gimel Kochavim Ktanim come out earlier than Gedol, than Beinonim. It's a difficult shach that's noted by Rabbi Kiveger from the Pre-Chorosh, that the Tanim usually come later than the Beinonim. Okay, now, one final word on this, since if Zion, this goes by Zmanim, not by Tefillah. And so that means if during the week, let's say, you're davening Ma'ariv early, or in Bein HaShemashis, it's totally irrelevant. Even if there's one shul in town, it doesn't matter. It goes by the Zmani Hayom. So even if the Tzibur is davening Ma'ariv early, totally ignore it. You go by Shkia in terms of whether when the child was born. And that's true for Shabbos too, which is the most common time that Minyanim will be davening early. So, just to give us a scenario, see, in metropolitan areas, you have tons of Minyanim, so it's hard to pinpoint one Minyan. Let's say you live in a bungalow colony for the summer, and there's a birth there, and there's only one bungalow colony within 150 miles. So that's the Minyan in town, and they daven early. And the child's born 7:30 on a nice summery day, after they already said boy v'shalom. So it's also irrelevant. And even though another astute fourth-year Talmud noted that the Mechaber doesn't discuss that case, because the Mechaber just speaks about the case during the week, but I checked it up in the Sefer Bris. He quotes some other posts, and he says explicitly that way. For Shabbos, same thing.
How about the Ramah?
You shouldn't say explicitly the Gavi Mila?
Yeah.
Okay. I also thought it was true. I didn't remember, so I didn't want to attribute it to him.
Right, the Ramah.
Right. Yeah. So there are Chumris, but even though the Mice, I think we override that too. But by Mila, we go by times of day. Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know, because you can't. Certainly Rove is for sure good enough. But you're asking, maybe Rove Haro should not be relevant there, since it's not the regular Yitzia. I'm sure it's discussed. Sefer Bris has everything under the sun. So, but I didn't check that up. Okay, but thank you for mentioning that. This will be the first installment in that a C-section child also has the bris on the eighth day. But as we'll see, since that's questionable, whether it's maybe it should really be on day one, so we're machmer it on day eight because of suffix, but we're not derech Shabbos for that, because that's a suffix bris shalob bezmana, because maybe it should be day one. Okay, hadron aloch b'li neder simin reish tanach beis. Now, reish samach gimel. Now let's come back to discuss the issues of Choli, which are partially mentioned in Reish Samach Beis Siv Beis, and a lot in Reish Samach Gimel. Now we get controversial. Okay, what could you do? Life is controversial, especially in such an important topic like Mila. So the general rule of Choli is as follows, as recorded by the Gemara. I think this is Reb Lez de Mila, that if a child is somewhat ill, but it's not choli kol aguf. I mean, it's either choli kol aver or whatever, so something that's not a systemic illness. Or, as the Shach quotes from the Rishonim, that he's mitzdar for some reason. Either machmas choli or machmas davar acher. Exactly what does this mean? He's mitzdar, machmas davar acher. I didn't get a handle on this. You gotta wait till the choli disappears. Otherwise, you can't give him a mila. Once the choli or the tzar disappears, then you do a bris. Now, exactly what this is very relevant lemaisa. I know different rabbanim have different stances in this. And let's say the baby has a diaper rash, so that's enough to push off a bris. It sounds like from the shach, yes. No, that's tsar. It's at least a davar acher. But I got the impression that it's not the minig. So this needs a achra. I pardon my ignorance, but it's something you got to look into, the exact gedder of what is called tsar to the lay of bris. But let's say it's choli kol haguf. So then the Gemara paskins, even though there was a suffix on this, but the Gemara paskins that once the child is totally healed, you have to wait an additional 7 days, meaning 7 me'es l'eses, 24 times 7 hours from the time the doctors say the child is totally healed, and then you do the milah. Parenthetically, that would be a situation when lechatchila you'll do a bris in the afternoon, because sometimes that will be the time that that's the 7 days. It could be you first get the clear in the during the afternoon. Obviously, if the clear is given at night, you're gonna have to wait till the next morning because you can't do a bris at night. This is the psak. Now, what about a yellow baby? So, I'd rather not talk about yellow babies. It's too close to comfort. But anyway, here we go. Yellow babies. So the Gemara has a famous series of stories from Rav Nachman when he advised people concerning this, that he named the kid Nachman after him, that you shouldn't be mal a red baby, you shouldn't be mal a yellow baby. In modern contemporary medical terms, even though we can't be absolutely certain, but this is associated with a very common neonatal means afterbirth, neonatal condition called jaundice. Jaundice meaning, there are two types of jaundice. You have materials on that in the packet. Rabbi Tendler wrote a little medical halachic article on that. There's what's called a physiological, I believe, jaundice. And pathological jaundice. In other words, regular jaundice, that's part, very much a part and parcel of the regular birth and initial growth process of a child, which is physiological, and pathological, meaning something wrong. There's something wrong with the child. So the second kind, pathological jaundice, if there's a diagnosis for that or a suffix for that, so we now enter into the realm of chola kol gufo, and once the child is healed, bez Hashem, so then you wait 7 full days. Different posts can have different sheets on this, but one rule of thumb is there's something called Billy Lights. They have, I don't know if I pretend to mention this here, though I missed the Chabura, I was in Eretz Yisrael, so I missed Tommy did. So his sheet amongst and others all this way too. What? No, Billy Lights. Billy Lights is what you do to solve the problem of the Billy Rubin. So the meaning that if there's an elevated level of what we'll get in a moment to the Billy Rubin, so they put him under the lights, and that's supposed to heal the problem. If they already had to do that, so Rabbi Tendler Shita is that choli kol gufo, and you got to wait 7 days once you're given the clear head of the child being healthy again. Now, so here is where we have the red baby. There's not too much discussion of, as far as I've seen in modern medical halachic literature, but the yellow baby there's a ton of. Sefer Bris, of course, does an excellent job as well, and quotes from doctors and gives you the whole rundown. Billy Rubin, I'm sure Rabbi Tendler introduced you to. He probably said the joke that he's the cousin of Shlomo Rubin, whatever. So okay, so the liver has to kick into gear, and it takes a while for it to do so. Rabbi Tendler used to always quote, I'm sure he did this year, but that's part of the moifsim of the bria, because there are free radicals that are hanging around the blood, and that's the way it has to be. Okay, so. Usually what happens is that there's a pigment in the blood. It's a certain enzyme, whatever, chemical. I don't know what I'm saying. It's the chemical in the blood. And the liver takes that away in a normal adult. And before the liver kicks into high gear, so it takes a while. So in a typical child's development, so his bilirubin count, meaning how much of that stuff hasn't been cleared out by the liver, is going to peak at around day 5. And then it's going to go down. If there's a lot in the blood, and depending on the nature of the child, also the texture, the color, the skin of the child, the yellow will show. This is where the yellow comes from. The Aruch HaShulchan also notes this. It's part of the development of every child. You know, it gives. It wasn't quoting, you know, all the numbers of Billy Rubin. They didn't have those lab techniques then. But it was very clear from the Aruch HaShulchan too, this is a normal process. So therefore, Dina de Gemara is that we're concerned that if the child's yellow, that he's not yet ready for the milah. Now, the pashtu pshat in the Gemara, as pointed out by the Aruch HaShulchan, is so when the child becomes un-yellow, so then you do the milah. Ah, what about 7 days? Well, we're not saying kid's sick. This is a normal process. But nonetheless, we consider it as where we tend to put it, we consider it an extra risk factor. Right? He said it in a different context, but that would apply here too. So we don't want to do the milah. But once that disappears, So then we do the meal. In other words, we are treating the existence of yellow in the baby's skin the same as a choli be'echad me'evarav. It has the same halacha. The way some poskim put it is that the child is not yet ripe for mila. Alonis bashel adayim. I use that term because Rav Moshe Feinstein, for example, applies that same kind of principle to an underweight baby. There is a hesitancy in poskim to allow mila for a child who's underweight, and again, different shittas about what, 5 pounds, 6 pounds, whatever. So there again, but as soon as they hit weight, you do the meal. You don't wait 7 days. The child's never sick. Again, unless we're talking about a case where a child went to incubator, was severely underweight, and other problems as well. So that's another example of this kind of idea, where you wait till it's ripe, and then you do the meal.
You say wait till you mean on the eighth day after he becomes healthy that you do the meal, or is it on the seventh?
So it's seven times me eighth l eighth, so it's eight. So it's what we would call eight, generally eight halachic days, and you know, including the endpoints, okay. Right? But it's 7 full days. So if the clear is on Monday, so then you can do the meal on the next Monday at the same time.
It's 7 days. Irrespective of what you hold on the eighth, what 8 days is. And even if you hold 8 days, it's 8 full days, so it's still the 7.
What do you mean 8 full days?
And you don't by Mila, you don't go
May slaves. Mila, you count the endpoints, and you don't go May slaves, right? So the child's born on Sunday, so the bris is on Sunday. So Sunday to Sunday. It's not machlokas about that. There's a discussion in the Gemara about whether these 7 days for refuah are my eighth lays days or regular days, and we're chayshish lechumra that 7 eighth lays. There are those quoted by the Aruch HaShulchan and the Sefer Bris who hold not that way. You hold them when it comes to a yellow baby, he's called sick, and therefore you got to wait zayin me eighth lays. But that's not the standard psak. So along comes medical science, makes trouble. And medical science says we have discovered the source of yellowness. And therefore, if we could see that the number is not so high, or that the number is going down, so we could rest assured that the child is healthy, and even though the child has a color, so you could still do the mila. In other words, we could override the sif in Shulchan Aruch. And this is what I dragged out of Rabbi Tendler quite a few times in the past, and this year I wasn't there to do so, but... So, Rebbe, you're telling us that this sif in Shulchan Aruch is no longer relevant ever, because, Mamanavshach, if the bilirubin is good, so then you ignore the yellow. And if the bilirubin is no good, so then you're not just going to wait till the yellow disappears, you're going to wait Zion Meis Leis after the health is gotten. So he said, yes. And it wouldn't be the first time that poskim have overridden sometimes psakim in the Gemara or the Shulchan Aruch based on changing medical science. They all like pointing to the Mechaber himself, who said that we don't do rechitz anymore, the Ishtanu HaTzvoyim, etc. Okay, so this gets involved in a whole massive debate about do you trust doctors, you don't trust doctors, do you ever override halachis? It's more relevant than the Metzitza controversy, but then I'm not going to get into at least not now. How do we paskin on this issue? So Rav Tendler, Shlita, as well as Rav Willig, and many other poskim as well, go with the medical approach. And they follow the medical advice, and therefore we ignore the color yellow. There are quite a few other poskim, certainly in the Hasidic community, that's Chayk v'Le'Yavar, in the yeshiva community of Eretz Yisrael, also holds this way, that go the other way. That yellow is yellow, that's it. You got to wait till the kid is clear skin, and then you don't do the mila. So Rabbi Tendler noted that if you're going to go that route, so that means that like 50% of the brisim are going to be brisim shelo bezmana. So the other camp would say, so what? That's the Gemara. That's it. That's what we follow. I want to note that one of the Bein Bar Yeshiva is a notable exception, I believe, in terms of... I got the impression that most go with Rabbi Tendler's approach here, the medical approach, and that's Rabbi Bleich Shlita. He published on this in Volume 2. I just had an opportunity right before the year to speak to him about it. He says, absolutely, and all those who say otherwise are dead wrong. And he says, all medical science could do is create a suffix. I don't know if Tendler did this year, but in the package you have such a tshuva from Rav Kook, who said the same thing concerning the Metzitza controversy, that medical science, when it seems to contradict or whatever, maybe go against that which is written in the Gemara, it can create a suffix. So, midei suffix lo yitzanu, and therefore, you gotta wait till the baby's skin is clear. For further Mar Makomos, I know Rabbi Flug wrote an article on this in a recent journal of the RJJ, a few journals back, I think his conclusions are more along the lines of William Rabbi Tendler. Didn't get a chance to read that article, but and he's the one who gave me that Mar Mokum, that Rabbi Bleich was a holdout here, that yellow and that. So obviously, La Halacha, you're going to have to either go to the source on your own, Hegiel Hira, or Asel Harav, in terms of how to paskin on this. No, he goes to the Aruch HaShulchan. Unless, and he was masking, same thing. And once it's already systemic, Billy Lights, whatever, so then you got to wait 7 full days afterward. Okay, but for him, at least, the Shulchan Aruch has application. Right? Okay, good. The end of the discussion of the babies, the Chalila didn't make it. About if two children died as a result of the bris, so you don't do the meal on the third. Here again, there's a discussion in the Torah Mada kind of works as to whether or not this is or is not hemophilia. It's very tempting to say it is. Sounds like it's genetically related to the mother, so on and so forth. Although the Ramah is machmir that you choshesh even if they're common fathers, right? If you have a common father and three different mothers, so we'll still be choshesh not to do the third milah bismana. I just wanted to point out a typo in the Shulchan Aruch, those who are using the packet. In Sif Beis, it says Venera, end parenthesis, the suffix nefashas lahakil. That end parenthesis belongs before the word Venera. You'll take a look. I hope people are not just relying on my chazara. If you actually go through the Shulchan Aruch, you'll see. If you don't put the parenthesis one word earlier, it doesn't read straight. Sif Beis, the last four words of the Ramah are Venera, end parenthesis, the suffix nefashas lahakil. That end parenthesis belongs before the word Venera. If you look at it, you'll see it doesn't make sense any other way. Okay, now, I wanted to discuss the following idea, which is relevant not so much for this question, but could be relevant for other issues as well. Did Rabbi Tendler discuss the fact that when we have a hemophilic baby, Bisman Hazeh, you should inject him with factor 5 in order to stop the blood, in order to give him a clotting factor and to do it that way? Oh. So here I wanted to note the following. Again, based on what Rabbi Tendler himself noted on maybe this year or maybe previous years, it's an important nekuda. Let's go back for a moment just to that earlier sif in Reish Samach Beis, sif Beis. The Mechaber paskins there that if it's choli b'miktzas aguf, so you delay the bris. So Rabbi Tendler noted that here, and he's masking to this, halacha is more machmir than medical science. Medical science would say cleared for surgery is the criteria, the criterion whether you should do a bris b'zman or not. Halacha says, are there any additional risk factors other than the surgery of Mila itself? So hence, halacha says if there's some kind of other disturbance in the child's system, even though he's not sick, but there's some kind of other mixas chayli, whatever, becher mevarav, or tsar, whatever, however you define that, so that's an extra risk factor, and you're not willing to undergo that. The Torah commanded us to risk ourselves to some extent with Mila. The way the famous Medrash puts it, alecha hiragnu kol hayom ze Mila. That sometimes Mila Chalila could lead to death. So we have to risk our lives to some extent, you know, a certain percentage of risk. But no more than the Torah tells us. So that's why we delay. Okay? That's the end of that analysis. Now we come back here. The Rambam paskins that if you have such a case of two babies that didn't make it, now the third, so you don't do a bris, so says the Rambam, Ad she yisgadel, v'yischazek briuso, and now you do the Mila. So the later poskim, the Noi Behuda, the Chassam Sofer, they said, well, wait a second, where did the Rambam get that from? Didn't the Gemara discuss a concept called Orel Shemesu Echov Machmas Mila as an example of someone who's not Lahachis violating Mila? So what's the simple implication? That if you're not doing the bris when he's younger, so you don't do it at all. In other words, if you're not doing it because his previous two brothers died. So where did the Rambam come up with this idea that you gotta wait till he gets older, and then you do it then, and you know, hopefully he'll be stronger. All the more so, there's a strong medical cash on this, because if the condition the Gemara is talking about is hemophilia, so it's not gonna help to wait till he gets older. Adrav, it's worse, he'll bleed more. So it's a difficult Rambam, but nonetheless, the poskim, the Noi Behuda, Chassam Sofer, they weren't prepared to override it. So, I hate to say this, but the Noi Behuda says, basically, so you wait till the kid gets older, he seems healthy, do it on a sunny day, and hope for the best. So it's very, very, why are the ordinary psak? We're dealing with the suffix bikuach nefesh. So the Chassam Sofer, sensitive to this very difficult shita here, especially the Ramos, the one who wrote the book, on don't worry too much about delaying a bris. Because Efsher lahachzir nefesh achas miYisrael. So why was he willing to risk this child here? So the Chassam Sofer was masbir. Again, Rabbi Tendler quoted this in previous years, maybe this year too. I didn't get a chance to hear the tapes, that's why I'm mentioning it here. That the Chassam Sofer has a wild chiddush, and he says the following. He says, we don't have to take on additional risk factors for Mila, but that's only when we'll be able eventually to do the Mila. Later date, we'll be willing to delay it. Right, that's the language of the Rambam and that halacha is that you can always push off a bris, right? She'ef shelo lomo la'achar zman, but e'ef shelo ha'achzer nefesh achas miYisrael olam. And what if it's e'ef shelo lomo la'achar zman? So if it's varai sakana, of course, and whatever, if it's like a very significant sakana that you know of course you're not going to do the mila ever. But if it's just an increased risk factor because this child had his two brothers die from mila, and therefore there's certainly an extra risk factor, so the Rambam is prepared to allow you to assume an extra layer of risk, but wait till the child gets older and stronger. But without that extra nakuda, meaning the fact that you're not going to be able to do the bris at all, the Rambam wouldn't even be prepared to do that. The bottom line is, though, it's still a great chiddush, and all the more so if you've identified a condition as hemophilia, so then it's a known risk factor, and even the Rambam wouldn't tell you that you got a vadei b'misakin the baby here. So, Baruch Hashem, Achshir Dora, you know, so now we have a solution. And I'll inject a child with a factor 5. Again, I'm saying it from layman's terms here, you know, to have clotting. So Rabbi Tendler pointed out, and what gives me the right to tell you to inject a child with factor 5? Isn't that an extra risk factor? Right? You know, we're risking a little bit. There's always going to be a risk. Maybe it wouldn't work, whatever. Maybe the injection will, infection, you're giving him extra risk. So that's what he said. That's this Chassam Sofer with the Rambam. That if that's the only way you're going to get this kid to do the Mila, then that little extra risk, that's your mechuyev to take. That's the whole analysis there. Again, I don't know if he gave that over this year, but there's an interesting point here. Separate discussion, I don't know if Tandler mentioned it, about the maybe it could be mala hemophiliac baby with laser beams, which would be bloodless surgery. Or maybe they should use the clamp, whatever. No, okay, so that's the discussion. Number one, because it's going to be bloodless. But maybe you have no eitzah, so that's the best thing you do. Number two, it's laser beams. So who says you can do a mila with laser beams? Maybe it has to be a chituch. Maybe you can't just have a... So that's a discussion. Shlomo Zalman, I think, was one of the early poskim to deal with that issue. But no, won't go further on that, because I don't really know too much about it. Okay, now we go on to the topic of Hatofas Dam Bris. Hatofas Dam Bris, as we mentioned... is done midina de gemara. Again, there's a machlok sishan a paskin on this, but we paskin that you do it when the child is nolad mohul. What does nolad mohul mean exactly? The Aruch HaShulchan makes this point. Let's not confuse nolad mohul, halachic nolad mohul, with what sometimes is in the common jargon called nolad mohul. So again, I think Rav Billet did an excellent job of being masbir the whole process of mila. But just a quick summary, if this is the Atara, right, of the Aver, so here's the ridge where it kind of fans out a little bit before the Gid. This is the Aver, let's say, in an upright position. So if this is totally clear, everything's clear, as if the child had a bris, so that's what we call Noilad Mohu. But let's say the skin is over there, right, it's covering what we call the ring. We'll get more about that later. We'll introduce it later about the actual Maisamila. So that's not noilad mohul. That's an oral. That's because the at least one shita in the atara is covered. So there you got to cut that skin off. But if it's totally noilad mohul, which as the poskim all point out is a rarity, I don't know if the halachic shut even has one case of a real noilad mohul. I mean, ever since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, and I don't know if these things happen. Mixus noilad mohul you have all the time. Skin's over here, skin's over there. Sometimes it's combined with hypospadias, as the Rabbi Tendler discussed with those handouts, where the nekev is in the wrong place. But mamish noilad mohul is a rarity. So that's why this halacha is rarely going to come up in this context. But let's say theoretically, and it's also going to be relevant, because we, the Ashkenazim at least, have expanded the horizons of a Tavas Dam Bris immensely. Because any time you have a bashed bris, either begavra or bizman, you're going to do a Tavas Dam Bris. So you got to know how to do it. So how do you do it? Did the Rabbi Tendler discuss it? How do you do it? So, I'm still confused about this. I'll tell you any mask here. I'll tell you what I don't know, just like I tell you what I do know. Sefer Bris has a whole discussion about this. apparently, I'm taking my Rebbe's word for it, Rav Shechter said this on tape, the Or Zeruah says, based on the Gemara, what does the Gemara say? Why are you doing Hatavas Dambris on a Noilid Mol? Why? He has no Orla. So what's the language of the Gemara? I remember. It's a Suffolk Orla Kvusha. What do those words mean? So the Pashtib Shat, that's what the post can seem to say on the page, Orla Kvusha is we're worried that there's some kind of thin skin that is so fused to the Atara that it almost looks like the Atara itself, but it's really a skin. So now I ask you, Rabbi Yisai, so what should you be doing in order to remove that thin skin in order to be choshesh? So you should be like peeling away a little bit, right? So now, so the Arzurua says, right, that's what you have to do. That's what Atavas Dambris is. It's peeling away a thin layer of skin. So I, that could make the kid into a krus shofcha if you don't play your cards right. So Rabbi Shechter quoted the Gemara. That's exactly what happened in the Gemara. There was a story there about someone who did it, and he was angry at himself. He said, Tasi Lee, that I should have been Makel. I should have paskin that you don't need that Tavas Dambris. The bottom line is that we paskin you do need a Tavas Dambris. And happily, we don't paskin like that Or Zeruah. So what does Orla Kvusha mean? So I'm just giving over from the Rebbe. I don't know what these words mean, but so apparently the Avnei Nezer, and just push the pshat, what do the words mean? The Avnei Nezer and Rabbi Soloveitchik said, you know what Orla Kvusha means? It means not pressed Orla, but suppressed Orla. What do they mean? That somehow in the development of this child, the program was that there should have been an Orla there, but it somehow didn't get there. In other words, there is no Orla, gone, nothing there, right? The program was it should have been there, but it was kavush, you know, somehow the development didn't allow it to be there. So if the programming was, I don't know what these words mean, if the programming was that it should never have been there to start out with, you wouldn't need a Tavas Dambris, because that kid never had or should have had an Orla. But if the programming was the genetic programming that it should have had but didn't come out, then you need some kind of substitute bris. So you do Hatavas Dambris. Okay, so according to that approach, what do you got to do? You got to make child bleed a little bit. Where? So there's a machlokas aposkim. Some poskim say you do it on the atara itself, which would work very nicely with that approach. You know, it's or lakfusha, right? And it's supposed to be there. Some say you do it at the place that you would be cutting had the child had an orla. And where is that place? So you'll recall from Rabbi Billet's presentation, let's say I would do the mila without the fancy technique they use. So what would you do? You would cut around here, right? What do we do lamaisa, you remember? You don't want to do that because it's too risky. So what do? You pull the skin, you cut, and then it snaps back, right? But the bottom line is, where's the cut? The cut is on this place of the skin. So that's what many poskim say, that's where you do Atavas Dambris, because that's where you would be cutting it to start out with. The Chazon Ish sided with the first approach. You do it on the Atara. Other poskim go with the second approach. So halacha l'maisa, the molim that I'm on with Daktek, I was told, what they do is that under the ridge, where the Atara matches the meets the Gid, so they a little scratch on a little bit the Atara and a little bit the Gid. So this way the Yotze both sheets.
Adam said you didn't even need that.
You mean just Srira Saddam? Yeah, that's a further din. That's a chazanish, and not even one with that chazanish. Some say you actually need the dam itself. So what they do is lamaisa, they have a little prick. That's the bottom line. Okay, so this is Hatavas Dambris. It's done a lot. It's done a lot because you a lot of times have situations where people become frum later in life and they had a medical circumcision with a nochri. Ger, especially in America, most of the Americans are all medically circumcised, and so on and so forth, and if he's converting. So a lot of times you do have this Tavas Dambris. I wanted to mention parenthetically here a topic that was mentioned in the Chabura, and that is the idea of blood in general. Blood in general when it comes to the Maisa Mila. So Rav Moshe Feinstein Tzatzal, as well as other poskim, assume that every mila needs blood. It's based on a Rashi in Masechta in Shabbos, Perek Blessed Mila. He quotes the pasuk in Yecheskel of Erev Alayich, Verech Meseth Mesbeses B'Damayich, Merlach D'Mayich Yiv, D'Mayich Hayi, that bris not just de facto has bleeding, but it has to have bleeding. So that is the primary reason that the poskim were mitnaged to the use of clamps in the mila process. The Gumko clamp, which was the medical clamp that's used in hospitals, leaving aside the whole inquisitionary kind of technique that's used, or the Bronstein clamp, which also can at least lead to a bloodless mila. The poskim objected to it because the assumption was that you need bleeding. One of the riots, so I'll tell you two riots that Rav Moshe has to this mahalach. One is the bracha. A little bit of a problem. Not the bracha that we say in the context of a Jewish bris, but the bracha we say in the context of a ger, where we speak about the dam bris. She'al molei dam bris lo neskai mushmayim voretz. And Rav Moshe Feinstein reasons, and he has al cheshbon why we don't say it for a regular mila, but the concept is the same. He says, lo yitachin, that the concept of bris is different, you know, from there to here. You need dam bris. That's rule number one. Rule number two, let's go back to the Ramah and with the Shach and the Taz. We paskin, you need a tavas dam bris, halacha lemaisa against the Ramah, all the times you batch a bris, right? Mativo shel halacha zo. Why are you doing dam bris? The arla you removed already. The priya you removed already. So you could have said, because you batched the bris, so it's like noil and mol. So now you should do a tavas dam bris. Says Rav Moshe, no. No, the pshat in doing a tavas dam bris when you batch the bris is what? Because one thing I can be misaking at the right time, the dam bris, right? Now, if you do a mila tolches, or you do a mila belailo, you do a mila denachri, so the mila you can't fix, done already. Priya you can't fix, done already. But what about the aspect of mila, namely that you're supposed to cause bleeding? That you could fix. Then you could do it bisman. You could do it at the right time, on day. So that's Rav Moshe's second raya to this idea. The fact that those posts can assume that you got to have dam bris to this raya that you need bleeding when it comes to a mila. I just note that Rav Shechter in the Nefesh HaRav quotes from Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal that he was mistopic about this. And he suggested, you know, that tantalizing chiluk, you know, with the bracha, that maybe by geiris you need dam bris, but maybe not by a regular child. I just throw out, and Rav Moshe himself is mistopic about this. No, halach lemaisa, a moil used the clamp. Rabbi Tendler quoted a story in his shul, so it's good to have, you know, rabbinic knowledge and medical knowledge too. The moil, you know, waved to the crowd, you know, whatever, the mogain, not to be confused with the mogain clamp. The mogain is just a shield, so they shouldn't cut chalila the atara. That's perfectly okay, because it's not a clamp, it doesn't cause the bleeding to stop. But so he mugging, apparently the moil was afraid, or whatever, I don't know. So then he slipped out of his pocket like a magician, you know, sleight of hand. He slipped out of his pocket the mugging clamp, put it on, and in an instant it was done. So Rav Tendler paskin on the spot, this is because Rav Tendler's guts. He said, Hatovas dam bris, right now, you botched the bris, and didn't botch, he caught the meal and priya, but didn't do a tovas dam bris. So I'm just noting, Maisa could be that psak is mikubal by everyone, but Rav Moshe has a suffix, I'm not sure. So what do you do, Maisa, if you had a bloodless bris? So do you have to do a tafas dam bris or not? And also, is the kid an oral? You know, can he eat the carbon pesach? Right, he's not sure about these things. So again, Maisa, it seems it's unresolved, and halach Maisa would seem that psak of Tendler is what should be followed. But again, that would need a shaila. But that's why cell phones are good. You know? Rebbe, the moil botched it. What should I do? Should I tell him to do a tafas dam bris? Okay, next. Yeah.
Why is the Mechaber and Sif Dalet say that you went to a tafas dam bris right away on Yom Shmini? Why is he?
Okay, that's a good point. I didn't discuss that. I was going to gloss over it. But if you look there and in the Shach, before you're going to do a tafas dam bris on a real noilid mohu, you got to do some investigation. Because leaving aside what Orla Kvusha in the Gemara means, but there could be a reality of a physical Orla Kvusha. And if there is a real Orla Kvusha, then you got to cut it. So what they're saying there is that if you need time to investigate, so let's say the child should develop a little bit and maybe the aver will grow a little bit. I don't know exactly what the anatomy is here. So you'll be able over time to have more of a confidence that there is no skin there. So then you'll do just Hatavas dam bris, as opposed to if it's really skin, then you have to cut it. So if necessary, you could delay the bris a little bit. That's what they start discussing. Lemivdika yafe yafe. and they're going to feel it to make sure there's no skin there, because if there is, you're going to have to cut it.
Is the ramification of the Rav's rejection of Rav Moshe mean he would approve of the use of a clamp?
You mean Suffolk rejection. Right. Lav Dafka, because there were other objections too, especially the Gumko, which is Har Beit Tsar B'Dover. And it could be for medical reasons alone you should reject the Bronstein clamp. Why? Because with a Bronstein clamp, Chalila, you could cut off half the Atara if you're not careful. You can't do that with a Mogain. But with that, you could. So, you know, like, what are you trying to gain? Is there any risk-benefit here? And then, I'm not sure if the Rav would go for the Chodosh Elsa Minotara Svara, but that was something Ramosh advanced here too. Right? Now, we don't make changes. This is the way it's done. We have, okay. Good. Who could do a Mila? I don't know if the boys got the email, but just the people who are watching the clock, which you should be. Five dead. Okay. okay, I'm trying to put everything in today, so we don't have to carry over to next week, because I already want to focus on Gairs. Who's kosher to do Mila? So here, the ones that certainly could do Mila are an Eved Knani, obviously someone who's already partially Jewish, not just an Eved. A Katan, notwithstanding the Ksosa Sa'ara, that maybe he's not a Bar Shlichus, so maybe under ordinary circumstances he shouldn't be doing the Mila. An Oral Yisrael Shemesu Echav Machmas Mila, which of course gets involved in that whole discussion from the Rambam about whether he really should be doing a Mila even when he's older, But okay, bottom line, as the Shach notes, it could be he's afraid to. So you can't really call him a mummer for that. And of course, a regular Yisrael. The Mechaber Paskins that a Yisrael Zohar, Godol, is Kodem Lekulam. Why? Doesn't say. So, if someone can get back to me with an answer for that, let me know. I didn't really see a bit mucker on that. The Aruch HaShulchan discussed it a little bit. I didn't really understand what he was saying. But there is this assumption that even though these people are kosher, but you should preferably use an Adam Yisrael Godol. According to the Ktzos, because Bar Shlichus, okay, good. What about an Isha? So the Mechaber Paskens that a woman is kosher to be a Moheles. Of course, you'd have a Raya from Tzipora, which the Gemara itself discusses in Masechet Avodah Zarah. But the Ramah quotes the dissenting opinion that a woman may not be a Moheles. What is this based on? So the Taz quotes, it's all based on a Gemara Avodah Zarah Chof Zion, that's quoted by the Bera Goyla. Why can't a Goy be a Moel? So there is an opinion in the Gemara that a Goy can be a Moel for Jews, but we Paskin they cannot. Why not? So one is based on the fact that he is not Bechlal Bris. And it says, Va'atoas Brisi Tishmar, so only Bnei Bris can do the Mila. And others say, because it says Himol Yimol, which we read in the Torah Sheval Peh as Hamol Yimol, meaning only one who has a Bris can do a Bris. But one who does not have a Bris, Mila, cannot do a Bris. In other words, is it conceptually that they Bechlal Bris or not? Or is it that they actually have a Mila? So here it's interesting. I always say this every year, and no one ever gets back to me to try to show why it's not the other way, but the Gemara says that women are kemand mehili dami. I don't know what that means, but that's the language of the Gemara. So if the objection is that a guy can't do a Mila because he doesn't have a Mila, and as the Gemara points out, even if he had a medical circumcision, but halachically he's called an oral, they call it the Pasuk Kol HaGoyim HaReilim, Mishnah Nedarim, Hanoider min harelim, etc. So a woman is kemanda mehila, so she is bechlal hamol yimol, but she's not bechlal bris, she's not bechlal atoas brisi tishmor. I always throw it out, but no one gets back to me on this. I would have said pumt vakeret, the bris, you know, it's the covenant. The covenant is made with klal Yisrael, men and women. The physical reality of having a mehila, so women don't have. But the Gemara says exactly the opposite. So, someone get back to me here, some research. Okay, come back. The bottom line is that a woman is the nafka min between the two reasons. So the Rambam and the Rif, Paskin, Lakula, like the reason of Hamol Yimol, and therefore they allow a woman to be a Moheles, and Tosfos, Paskin's the other way, and therefore he does not allow a woman to be a Moheles. So the Ramah is Choshesh for the position of Tosfos, at least Lechachila. And that's why he says, Nogin Lahadar Acharish. Someone's asked me a question, and I assume the answer would be something along these lines. Had a non-frum family that a frum woman, a female pediatrician, had dealings with, and she knew that they were not going to have a medical circumcision either. They were not going to have a ritual circumcision, but they would allow her, as the pediatrician, to do it. So should she do it? So I think the answer is you got to assess what your odds are. If you can get them to consent to at least have, let's say, a male from pediatrician to do it, so be it. If not, then you rely on the Ikar Adin, which is a Psakra Machaber, and even the Ramah says, Nogin Lahadir Acher Ha'ish. Sounds like Ikar Adin he'd be prepared to allow a woman to be the Mohelef. But the Chachila not. Okay. A non-Jew, as we said, can't do the Mila, B'di'evid. We already discussed that earlier with the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, as well as the Shach's Ha'ora on the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. The Ramah adds now extra personalities that can't do the bris. A mumer l'chol Torah kula, and some poskim add to this, a mumer l'chal Shabbos b'farhesia, who is dino ke mumer l'chol Torah kula, or a mumer la'arelus, meaning someone who doesn't have a mila, not because of sickness of his other two brothers or his own, but rather because he doesn't hold of the mitzvah of mila. This is also based on those reasons over there. The Ramah is going with the approach that a mumer la'arelus, and certainly a mumer l'chol Torah kula, is neither bechlal va'atas brisi tishmar, because he has shirked the bris, he's not interested in the bris, nor does he physically have a mila. And he's not interested in having a mila. So he's not like a Yisrael Oral who's meisu achav machas mila, that he just technically doesn't have it, but he's still called a mohel. This is the psak of the Ramah. Tosfos, on the page in Masechet Avodah Zarah, suggests, at least with respect to a mumer la'arelus, that maybe not, maybe a mumer la'arelus is bechlal hamol yimol, because he's a member of Klal Yisrael, so he's a member of Bnei Yisrael, whatever, let's leave us, at least has Shem Yisrael. So, mumer la'arelus even has Kedushas Yisrael, because not a mumer l'chol Torah kula. So he's bechlal bris, and he's also bechlal hamol yimol. So, Rebbe Kiva Eger discusses the possibility that maybe we should be makel on this question, like Tosis, over the Ramah. So, halacha l'maisa, there's a psak that's quoted by the Nefesh HaRav, Rabbi Shechter quoting from Soloveitchik, that, again, similar to the psak we saw earlier concerning the woman, that even though no one passing that way, but I assume that's a reasonable psak, that let's say you have a choice of having a if you're having an irreligious Jew do the Mila now, or having a religious Jew do it later. Or sometimes you have a case where you could have an irreligious Jew do it now, or a religious Jew will do it when the kid's 5 years old. How could you have such a case? Let's say you have a chaplain stationed in the Philippines, and there's no mohel, whatever, was willing, or let's say in Baghdad, and there's no mohel who's willing to go out there. So the Rav paskind that it depends. If the person will definitely have a bris for his child when the kid gets older, when he comes back to civilization, so to speak, so then you gotta wait. The Ramah paskin is no good. But if you have no such option, or because the parents in question are not religious, so if you don't allow them to have the Mila with an irreligious doctor now, they'll never have the Mila later, because they're not going to allow the kid older to undergo the pain of Mila surgery. So then you should do it. You should rely on the other position. Yes, I'll tell you. I'm a little confused on this. I didn't look over the Rebbe Kiva Eger this year. Apparently, the analysis of Rebbe Kiva Eger might even apply to a mumer l'chol Torah kula, because the bottom line is he's still b'chlal bris, right? He's bound by it. He chose to get rid of it, but he's still bound by it. So the svaris might apply there too. That's why I think that. But the psak was not about a mumer l'arelus. The psak was about a mumer l'chol Torah kula. Okay. Correct, but. But that might be only relevant for other areas of halacha. Maybe the gabi dis halacha. You know, maybe here it's going to go by the Shem Yisrael at least. Okay. Anyway, let's continue. But the standard psak is not to allow a mumer l'chal Shabbos for Feresia or a mumer l'chol Torah kula do the bris. And even with the eved, the simple reading of the Ramah would be, even doesn't say it explicitly, but that it would need a tavas dan bris, at least misafik. Okay. The Ramah discusses the laws of chazara from a moil. Meaning if you tell a moral to do it and then you want to back out, it's not enough time to go through that. It's on the test, you got to look at it, but I don't have time to review it. Just a word to the wise that I learned the hard way. Whenever you call a moral to do a bris, and you're leaving a message on his answering machine, so say, I'm calling other people. So who first wants to get back to me, I'm going to give it to. That's what they say. As soon as your wife gives birth, you got to start calling the moralim because they get booked quickly. So if you leave a message on the answering machine, don't say, I would like you to do the bris. Say, I'm calling other people. The first one to get back to me will get the job. Okay, next. How do you do Mila? So Rav Tendler already discussed the difference between Mila and Priya Bezeach Hazeh and Mila and Priya Bevasachas. The way the Shulchan Aruch from the Rambam, and that's the simple reading of the Mishnah, records the Maisa Mila is a three-step process, two of which are actually part of the Mila and one of which is medical. The two-step process which is part of the Maisa Mila is Mila and Priya. Mila is the cutting of the outer skin. And again, as we pointed out, not the way they do it with the Gumko clamp, but the way Mylam do it, they pull down the skin, cut, snaps back. Right? That's the Orha Orla. Then after you do that, you have what the Poiskim called a Shlimel. It's a little membrane. Rav Tendler gave that muscle about the, you know, the little thing on the egg left over after you peel it. So that does not have to be cut. It just has to be pushed back. Very nice. You push it back, but then it's going to flop down again. So that's why they bandage up the baby tight over there, so then it kind of just grows in, and then it all heals and this is there. That's why a lot of times, at least in the earliest stages, when the child's younger and the aver is not so large, so you have like a lot of like gushy skin there, because that's the leftover from the Orha Priya sometimes. Two-step process. Cut and rip the Orha Priya and push it back. Priya means to reveal. In the last 200, 300 years, it became very, very popular for Moalim to pry off the Orha Priya from the Atara, pull down both skins together, and cut so that when it goes back, it's all clear. They don't have to bother pushing back the Orha Priya. Sometimes they leave a little bit just to be Mekayim the Zoyar that says he's supposed to do it with the nail and so on and so forth. So there were some traditionalists who objected to this whole approach of Milan Priya Vasachas against the Gemara. It's against the simple reading Gemara, the Rambam. You can't do it. But the Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, justifies the practice, and he points out Rabbi Yaakov Emden verified it, and they quote for that one of the Gaonim, that's where every time they quoted, Hani Bavli Biki, whatever, Umni Bavli Biki Bemila, and they do Mila and Priya Vasacha. So it has very early sources. Two skins on top of this. The first very thin skin is like glued to this. You got to break it off in order for it to disappear. Then you have an extension of the gid skin, which is the Orha Orla that goes on here. Standard practice, cut, then you have the thin skin, you got to rip the skin, push it back. Other method is you take a probe, a non-sharp instrument, you stick it in right here, and you go around that way. Next time you're at a bris, you'll could see it. He puts a little Vaseline on, it goes like that. What's he doing? He's prying off the Orha Priya from the Torah itself. Then they pull them both down, cut, and go back. Don't worry, it was a guy who fainted in the Milashir. He had to take that section much later. Okay, so Baruch Hashem, I'm not so squeamish when it comes to this stuff, otherwise I would have fainted long ago. Okay, so the parenthetically, those who do Mila and Priya Bevasachas, so the poskim say, can you do that on Shabbos? So, it depends how, you know, if your mom is a literalist, that's not Mila, so you can't do it, you can't do Shabbos. But what about the following Shaila? Obviously the kid's going to bleed on Shabbos, but that's allowed. The Torah allows it. But sometimes the kid will bleed when you do that. And that's not the Mila. So maybe you can't do that. So some posts can therefore assert it, that on Shabbos you can't do Mila in Priya Vasachas. Rova poskim, both Ashkenazi and Sephardi, Rav Yosef is representing the Sephardi community and Shlomo Zalman is representing the Ashkenazi community, they allow it. Why? For one of two reasons. Either it's a chelek of the Mila, because the bottom line is that's the way you're doing it, or because it's not a psikration. So that's the bottom line, that the Rova poskim can do allow it even on Shabbos, and Moalim who do Mila and Priya Vasachas during the week, I think do it on Shabbos as well. Okay? And then the Mechaber says, and then you do Metzitza. Okay, the magic word, the magic M word. Okay, so here there's a lot to read about it, and if you don't have Shas to go through, you can spend your whole lifetime reading all the literature on Metzitza, because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of pages that have been written on this topic. I just wanted to give a brief overview, which goes back to that Shaila that we discussed in terms of the yellow babies. Although there you have quite a few Rabbonim who consent to Rav Tendler's view on that you go by the Billy Rubin. And concerning the Metzitza issue, so Rabbi Tendler is known as a very strong sheet on this, and other Rabbonim are not so tzehitzed on this topic, even though they might agree with him fundamentally. So basically what we have here is that the Gemara says that if you don't do Metzitza, meaning if you don't extract. The Gemara, that's a whole shiloh, whether the Gemara really meant suck. Tzitzah, mitzah, or that's a tshuva's binyan seen you have in the packets. But the Gemara says if you don't extract the blood, it's a sakana. So the question is, modern medical science seems to say that's not the case. Again, if you go with Rabbi, I didn't ask him about mitzitzah, I should have asked Rabbi Blech about mitzitzah. If you go with that more, you know, not so trusting approach of doctors that, you know, modern medical science creates a suffix. So to abolish mitzitzah altogether, very, very not common amongst the rabbinic opinion, even amongst those that generally would, you know, take the medical data seriously. We abolish it, we can't, not going to abolish it. Gemara said to do it, we're going to do it. The question is how much to be choshesh for not only the medical evidence that it doesn't really help, but the medical evidence that maybe it will harm because of infection in the child, so on and so forth. So, the loyalists do it the old way, which is mitzitza bepeh, because the medayek, first of all, it's minig Yisrael. It didn't make up this minig Yisrael. For thousands of years, people did it. One raya they bring is from the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Shofar, you know, that if there's a mila on Rosh Hashanah that happens to take place before Tkiyah Shofar, So I think they say that's when it should take place, ideally. So the schus of Mila should be able to enter into the equation here. So he shouldn't wash out his mouth, even though normally he should, before he makes subsequent brachas. So the Dam Mila should intermingle with the Koil Shofar and serve as a schus. So they point out, obviously they were doing Mitzitza Pepeh, and that was written a long time ago. So, and no one disagrees with that. Everyone agrees that they've been doing it for years. Question is that since we have issues of Sakana, etc., risk factors, maybe we shouldn't do it anymore. So, some say you do bepeh, some say you do betub, some say you do besqueeze, meaning you use a sponge, and some say, theoretically, don't do it at all, but that's a retend l'shita, but during the week, we're not going to make a fuss over it. But on Shabbos, forget it, because then you're dealing with risking chil Shabbos. So that's what Retendler has stated. That position was dealt with very seriously by the Poskim in the 19th century, but Rubam Kikulam, they all came out l'kul on that. For a variety of reasons. That even if you're going to be choshesh, that you don't have to do mitzitzah nowadays, you can still do it on Shabbos. Why? But the kasha is a good kasha. So the Binyan Siyan says, because it's mekalkel b'chabura. So it's maximum at the Rabbana. So since the Gemara says you should do it, and we're not really so certain you shouldn't do it anyway, the Binyan Siyan was one of the staunch opponents of mitzitzah, even bepeh. So we're allowed to do it to risk at the Rabbana. Rabbi Fluke pointed out, but there's an opinion that it's not really so resolved, because some hold mekalkel b'chabura as chayiv. Okay. So the Avni Nezer says, because that's part of Hatofas Dam Bris, which is a chelek of every single mila. So even though you don't have to take out a gallon of blood, and it's machmir, you know, bris kishita, and Hatofas Dam Bris, right? But if you take out a little more, so that's nitpas in that chelek of the mitzvah. Similar to what the Rambam says about Kazayas Matzah. That kula was told to me by Rabbi Shechter. That's where Somichan. That even though he's very sympathetic to that position, as were the briskers, that maybe Bizman Hazeh, it's not really such an issue anymore, and that's why in brisk, they didn't do it bepeh either, they did it besponge. They didn't use the tube, I think they used the sponge. But so Rabbi Shechter said, that's what we rely on Shabbos, that even if you're going to be a fakbek, that it's no longer necessary, but it becomes a chelek of the Adam Bris. It's in the packet, that Avni Nezer. So again, Rabbi Tendl Shita is that you don't do it on Shabbos. My impression is that the consensus is that you do. And they have a variety of coolest, because it is a good kasha. It's chil Shabbos, if at least it's savik chil Shabbos. But the consensus is that you do it.
So he's assuming like that, remember that
every... Yeah,
also
yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think he actually has another tshuva where he spells that out even more. Okay? Okay, it is now 5 o'clock. Okay, I think we're going to just finish up the simon, and then the rest of the halachas will begin next week. With Hilchus Geirus, and we'll first begin with leftovers from Mila. The Shulchan Aruch discusses in Sif Hei the idea of tzitzim. Tzitzim is leftover skin. So, before understanding that, so we have to understand what's meant by atara, because tzitzim, leftover skin, is ma'akev if it's chofer rov atara. If it's not chofer rov atara, doesn't cover most of the atara, then it's not a problem. What's the atara? So the Beis Yosef has a whole discussion from what he quotes, the Chacham HaSfardi, and it's discussed by other Rishonim too. The Atara is either this whole, the pink portion of the Aver, of the top. Rabbi Shechter pointed out, Atara means crown, right? So it's like, you know, the crown, like a Sefer Torah. Or the Atara means the ring right where it joins the rest of the Gid. That's the Atara. Now, Rabbi Shechter pointed out, that's like a Greek, Roman, a wreath. Right? It's a mashal, different types of crowns. Okay, so that's a shaila. So if you go with the first approach, what's Rov HaTorah? So you could have the skin going up to here, right? And Rov HaTorah is revealed. But if you go with the approach, this is the Atara, and then that's none of the Atara is revealed. So the Balaman is with Machmir both ways. And therefore, the only time a mila would be considered kosher, even with the Evet, is if this ring is at least mostly revealed. Okay, the Machaber used the language of Roiv Oirech, Roiv Roichev, etc. So, but the bottom line is with Machmir, for, as I said, this Rov has to be revealed, meaning there can't be a strip, even one strip, that's covering a majority of this length over here. And this ring has to be majority revealed. Adkan, the mila itself. So along comes the Lach of Tzitzin and tells us that if you botched it totally, then you got to do another mila. And if you discovered it the next day or hours later, then you got to make new brachas because you didn't do a mila. If you have Tzitzim ha-ma'akvim as a mila. If you have Tzitzim she'ein ha-ma'akvim, so then the psak is as follows. The Mechaber, paskens like the Rambam, that you don't worry about it, that's it. The only time you'll take care of it is if you're still involved in the mila, so then you'll patch it up a little bit. But once you're poresh, it's done, that's it. It's going to be chavala shelo letzorech. Why should you wound the kid? For no reason. It's if it's not ma'akev. So the Ramah says no. During the week, even if you are ready with poresh, you do it again. Why? Hidur mitzvah. So that's the famous Bris Ketira about can you have a hidur mitzvah without a mitzvah? Right? You're just cutting it for hidur, but you did the mitzvah already. So while you're involved in the mitzvah, everyone says you should do the hidur. But once you stop, should you go back for the hidur? So the Ramah says yes, and the Shulchan Aruch says no, and the Shagasari says maybe. Meaning if it's a weak kid, don't bother. But if it's a strong kid, so then you'll follow the Ramah. Good. The same is true. Let me rephrase that. Everyone agrees, though, that on Shabbos, the only time you will go back to take care of tzitzim is in one of two circumstances. Either if you have tzitzim hama'akvim, right? Meaning where you didn't cut the skin that's choyfe roiva Torah, or you're still involved in the mila. But if on Shabbos you are poresh, and then you realize there's a little skin left, but it's not ma'akev, then of course you can't go back because it's chil Shabbos. Okay, that's what the Mechaber Paskin in Simrei Samach Vav. I just put it together with this. The final halacha in Simrei Samach Dalid is what happens, and here, as I'm getting older and older, so more and more students are sharing with me their own experiences, their own children, so I'm happy that I raised it here, and I'm going to raise it again. Moyalim should tell you this. I think it's a big avla that they don't. The nature of a child, a little baby's aver, is such is that even after a mila is done right, sometimes the skin will grow back. It'll fall back. Especially if your moyal is a chassidisher who's doing mila and priya separately. But even if you're doing mila and priya v'asacha, sometimes that skin's very gushy, so sometimes whatever's left will kind of slough back. So what do you got to do then? So the Psak and the Mechaber, based on a sugya at the very end of Perek Lo's, the mila, it's one of the, I think it's the last sugya there, or one of the last sugyas, is that it depends. If the skin really did a good job of going back, such that even when the aver is bekishui, even when the aver is miskasha, the child is near ka'orel. So then, the child's moho, but because of marasayin, you got to do another bris, meaning you got to cut the skin again. Kiveger is a shail about the bracha, pashi don't make a bracha. You don't make a bracha on a marasayin surgery, marasayin mitzvah. But if the aver is near a megula, the atara rather, the atara is near a megula, at least bekishui, so then you don't have to bother doing anything. At least you don't have to bother, let me rephrase that, you don't have to bother cutting. What's called begilui? Do you need a whole atara to be begilui, or just a little bit? So here the Truma Sedeshin, which is recorded by the Ramah, is makel, that since this is only because of Marasayan, it's enough for even a little bit of the atara to be revealed. You don't have to have the literal Torah revealed. And of course, that would mean, you know, the whole thing. No, it's just a little bit revealed is enough. Again, b'shas kishu, which is a kula. Why? Because more of the atara is going to be revealed when the aver is taught. Okay. What happens, though, if the aver is, the atara is megula b'shas kishui, but there's still skin covering it, so you do nothing? So the Mechaber says, no. You try to push the skin back. Sometimes bandage it a little bit for a while, so, you know, it won't come back again. But you don't have to cut. Let's say pushing it back doesn't work, so you don't have to cut. In other words, again, if it's megula, b'shas kishui, the atara is at least mixes megula, so then you you just have to push it back, the skin. If not, if it's totally covered, then you got to cut it because of marasayin. So I just mentioned this because it's very common. And the molim don't tell you. So sometimes you'll have the kids already 6 months old, and the babysitter or the will tell you, you know, did your kid have a mila? What's going on here? So then you go back to the molim in a panic, and the molim says, no problem. And he takes out his, you know, pushes it back, and that's it. Very nice, why don't you tell me? This kid could have grown up, and then what happens is after a few years, it fuses. And then you need surgery to remove it. So, mitzvah l'farsim. I'm happy that piercing led to another student came back. That said exactly the same thing happened. Then he came to the moral, said, oh yeah, no problem, push it back. Shkoyach, why don't you tell me? So that second half of the mechaber of pushing back when it falls down, but it's still golui bekishui, that's very, very common. One final halacha is the following. What happens if I do a mila, and before the skin grew back, the child only looks mohul when the aver is bekishui? Meaning what? It's a little hard to visualize this, but okay. So here's the atara, right? Here's the atara. So I cut off just enough skin to reveal the atara when it's bekishui, because when it's bekishui, less skin will do the trick, right? So, but that was the very first time I did the mila. In other words, the child looks a little bit aurel when the aver is roughly, because then the skin hangs down a little more. Is that a good mila or not?
When the
aver
is
bekishui, the whole atara is seen, gans atara. But when it's mace. So then a little bit of the atara is covered. Enough to passel up the mila, had he looked that way from birth. So the Rishalmi quoted by the Shach says, that's good also. That's the same halacha. You measure it bekishui. And the Chacham HaSfardi quoted by the Shach, which is paskin like by the Chassam Sofer, paskins that this thing with kishui, that's only a rabbinic kula that applies only with respect to the mila from Marasayan. But the first mila has to clear the atara even when the aver is mace, which would mean that you can't be mitzamtzem to just cut just enough, you've got to cut a little more. And this is all the more important because if you look in the Aruch HaShulchan and you ask Moalim, what they do in order to make the mila easier is they agitate the aver a little bit, so they make the aver bekishui. Sometimes the baby's that way anyway because he gets nervous, you know, the hands over him. So that means that they cut it, you know, the measurement, if you will, is done bekishui. So the good moil, he's using the marker, okay? So he should put the dot a little below where he feels the end of the atara, because he wants it to be clear, gam bishas avermes. Again, the shach is mekel on that, but certainly lechachila, it's proper to follow that other position of the chacham sfardi, and also for cosmetic reasons, that bishas avermes, the kid should also look mahul. Okay. Adkan, hakafa aleph, and beis, and gimel. Dalet Ein Vav will be next. Yeah, according to the Chacham HaSfardi, the mila has to be done correct, even by Aver Meis, which would mean a little more skin to be taken off. And then you could play around with looking mohol or not, only the Shas Kishui. But the Shach says it based on Rishalmi. The Chacham Sofer says the Bavli argues. That's the way you get that. I don't know how we knew the Bavli argues.
There's no applicant for Yamei 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 Yam